ready, gentlemen. Brace yourselves. This is it.
3, 2, 1.
Hey! I think we did it.
I think we did it.
Yeah. Man, happy Thursday.
Yeah!
Welcome to Team Awesome Morning Party. We're both sick.
Yeah. Well, sort of. I've got
sinuses,
something going on. I'm not sure. Yeah. I haven't diagnosed it yet, so I'm not a doctor.
It's weird.
I'm going to figure it out, though.
You do. When you figure it out, you let me know, bro.
In order to know what it is, I'm eating a donut.
Okay.
Because I found a box of donuts.
I like that.
So
are there more?
Yes.
Oh, glorious day.
An entire box of donuts.
Really?
Yeah, I just found them. I found them in the other room.
Good news, guys. We're going to be okay today.
Yeah, we are.
Gonna be okay.
Woo!
We're really happy to be here today. We got an exciting show for you today.
Theology so exciting.
Thursday is going to be crazy.
Tell the people what they've won.
What is his name? Jean-Pierre Isbouts.
Yeah.
He is a National Geographic writer. He also has to be a professor of cultural studies and lots of crazy awesome things and lots of titles. He wrote a book, The History of Christianity.
Woo!
He's our guest today for Theology Thursday.
Woo!
And we've got a copy of that book. It's like a ginormous coffee table.
We had a copy until I took it.
Oh.
I did steal that book.
I meant
to tell everybody.
Oh, okay.
I took that book home and I said, I don't care.
Did you check it out?
What does that mean?
Did you look at it?
No, I took it home and sold it on eBay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a big old,
it's
ginormous, awesome book.
I got like $3,000 for it.
Stop.
I feel great. Doug, I feel great.
Yeah, it's not real.
Doug, can you hear us?
He can now. Or at least we hope.
Can you hear us, Doug?
At some point he will be able to.
I don't know.
He'll figure it out. He's got like 20 minutes until we have to talk.
Can you hear us? No, he can't hear us.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Try the one down on the end, Doug. Dat. The blue one on the end. It's seriously labeled Dat.
Yeah. Well, that's because the Dat.
The Dat machine. But isn't that what Zeta was running through the other day?
Got me. I don't even know anymore.
We're still figuring stuff out.
Guys,
everybody.
We got a brand new automation system.
Yes. It happened the other day, and all week we've been dealing with it.
Yeah. Installed a whole new computer system and some bugs yesterday.
Bugs.
Some kinks.
Not just here,
throughout
also
the week.
KNKT as
yeah,
well.
Our sister station, 107.1 KNKT.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting. We've been learning as we're going. I'm still trying to figure out this computer system, but that's okay, because I think I got some stuff figured out.
Oh, yeah.
We got an exciting show. So that's coming up 9 o'clock hour. Of course, 8 o'clock hour, the Aspen Project. Going to be hanging out with us, talking about last week's event and
yep.
all of the awesomeness that happened there. So, yeah. Oh, yeah!
Looks like somebody's blessed with the opportunity to host a very last-minute concert with Consumed by Fire. They wanted us to help them spread the word.
Who's Consumed by Fire?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Somebody really likes Woven Hand.
Mmm!
Somebody really enjoyed our show yesterday. I think that was during Shock Therapy.
Nice!
Yeah.
I like it.
It's cool.
Meeting new people. Getting new listeners.
Touching hands.
Reaching out, man.
Reaching out. Touching Doug.
And truck drivers everywhere.
Yep.
Touching you. Come on, guys, it's Thursday. Sweet Caroline. Ba, ba, ba. Telling you guys, we're excited today, even though I feel like sometimes when I get sick,
yeah,
I either get like tired and just want to go back to bed, or I get loopy and hilarious.
Loopy and hilarious.
I think I'm somewhere in between.
Look at this. Okay, so this is a free concert.
What?
It's happening Sunday night. I guess it just got booked at Westside Family Chapel in Los Lunas.
Dude.
It's not only whoever this Consumed by Fire band is, but it's also Bon Ray and Kalia. And it's free. They're going to take up a little, or they're going to try to help the bands out. Let's see. Can we talk about love offerings on... Can you say that? Love offering?
That's like the cool way of like a church getting a band and going, hey man, we're really trying
to help you guys
to
out.
Help get this band.
I can do factual information though. There will be a love offering taken.
Ah. Which is funny because I feel like that freaks people out who have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
A love offering is basically the way the church is able to help a band out without selling tickets at the door.
Or a speaker.
Yeah.
Band or a speaker. Anybody that comes through.
Yeah.
And they can put on a free show, but then they take like a... It's kind of like a pay what you want sort
it's
of
pretty
thing.
Pretty good though, man. It's pretty good.
It's the Christian
that.
Pay what
I
you
like
want.
I like that.
That's what that is.
Incredible. It's Thursday, y'all. Coming up at 6:30, we got birthdays. We got breaking news. First up on our morning, probably as always.
Probably.
Guys, you are correct. Yay. It is Matthew from Albuquerque.
That is correct.
That is correct, Matthew.
You guys are funny.
Nuh-uh.
I tell you, that's one reason why I'm always tuning into the station. Not other than that, the fact you guys have awesome programs, like, you know, I mean, that show, I mean, God in so many ways. It explains it in a great way, guys. I can't get enough of it. Like, last night, found awesome as always. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, you know, I have some CDs because when I started listening back in the eighth grade to the online series, I called the connection. I was able to get some free CDs since it was the first time of me calling in.
Yeah.
It was nice. I still have those CDs. I still listen to them like at night when I'm working, doing my homework.
Nice.
I just have those CDs playing. And sometimes I have the Hillsong CD playing too.
You have two CDs playing at the same time?
Mm. No, like, you know, when one finishes, I rotate it.
Oh, like a DJ.
Yeah, kind of, you know. I just have one of those old stereo systems. It's just a CD.
Yeah, I've heard of
those. I wish I had one with, like, the fancy ones that has, like, a three-track player. Like, one you can put, like, three CDs in and just rotates it. That I would love to have.
You would love to have that. So, like, a disc changer?
I can put my two Skip Heights of CDs in, and I can put the Hillsong CD in, and then I can just rotate the CDM.
You're describing the best life now, right now, Matthew from Albuquerque.
The best you now.
That's the best you and the best life.
Oh, yeah. Well, guys, I got good news. I got a call from Angelica Valdez's mother yesterday. She was found.
Yeah.
11:30 a.m. yesterday.
That's awesome, man.
That's good.
That's huge news.
I could have called you guys sooner, but it was too late and the phone line dropped here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's found now, guys. She's at home safe. Thank God that she's found. You know, I mean, I can tell you this. Anytime someone goes missing, you start wondering what's going on, what happened.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm glad. Whoever found her, good news. Good news.
Good news, man. Good news.
Speaking of good news, what do you want to hear this morning?
Oh, let's see here. You know what? I'm in the mood for some red jumpsuit apparatus.
Oh, man. Okay. We love May. Huge fan.
That's a good thing.
So, hey, definitely.
Guys, go ahead and play that. You guys have a great, wonderful day. I will see you all calling you in on the radio tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah,
we'll totally be here.
Go all right. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
No, we won't.
We won't.
That's okay, though, guys.
It's okay.
Tomorrow, taking a day. Taking a me day.
And it's okay.
And a Matt day.
Yep.
Me and Matt day. But we're here today, and we're really excited.
That's right.
As requested, our favorite song for May, it's called Suspension.
Booyah.
It's Team Awesome Morning Party.
Now.
Static.
Good morning.
Good morning to you there.
Okay, up and at 'em.
Team Awesome Morning Party.
Stay away from them.
Static Radio.
Turn on the news.
I have a little news flash.
We interrupt for this breaking news.
Hello, everyone. Today is November 20th, 2014, and it's time for your breaking news this morning. Maybe you're driving right now to work. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're up getting ready for work or school. Well, I'm here to tell you the news. With Steve-O.
Hi.
And Doug.
That guy.
Oh, my name is Doug.
Wait, Doug? Doug? Oh, no, Doug!
The number of the day is 237. That's the amount in dollars that we plan to spend per child this Christmas.
How much?
$237. That's up $13 from last year.
Gosh.
Why are you spending so much on your kids?
I can't help it. I just love them so much, guys.
I bet they're pretty stoked right now when they just heard me say that.
Yeah.
Daddy's spending $237 a piece on us.
Ugh.
Yes.
Oh, Christmas.
Why do you spend just as much money on Brody as you do on Jack and Luke? Brody doesn't even remember anything.
But he's so cute.
He's cute. Like, what? How old are you today?
I just realized yesterday was his birthday, and I'm trying to think, like, did we get him anything? I don't think we got him anything.
Mm-hmm.
We did?
You got him that Spider-Man balloon.
Nuh-uh, that was from work.
You didn't get him
Lydia
anything.
At the school got him that.
He loved it.
Yeah, he did.
He loved it.
That's all he needed.
Speaking of children.
Yeah.
Today's first news item. A child in India has been born with four arms and four legs and is being viewed by many people as divine because he resembles a Hindu god. It's actually an underdeveloped conjoined twin.
That's ridiculous. We all know it's really like the Peter Parker from Universe.
From Universe 21-3.
Yeah. When he became a spider.
Yep. New research shows that looking down to stare at your smartphone puts up to 60 pounds of stress on your neck.
Dang.
Dang. That's why you gotta hold it up in the air like me. Like this. Like you're worshiping.
You just look like it. It looks like you're taking a selfie the whole time.
No, look, if you hoist it up like this, you kind of, you bow. Sometimes you get down on your knees, and you're just kind of like, oh, I gotta check my Twitter. They're like, what are you doing? I'm checking the weather.
People are like, is that your iPhone? You say, no, it's my idol.
Idol. My idol. It's an idol.
Oh, man.
A Texas man tried to steal a car that was warming up, but because the windows were still frosted, he didn't know he was sitting inside, or that inside of the car was sitting a police detective.
No way.
So don't try to steal a frosted over car, idiot.
Gosh.
The sticky bandits have lost their touch.
Yeah.
They have lost it. A Utah woman was arrested after she tried to burn down her ex-boyfriend's house by leaving a pound of bacon cooking on the stove.
No.
I'll show you. I'll show you. You love bacon, you pig. I'll show you, pig. I'm gonna use your favorite food to burn this house down, pig.
Oh, man.
Police are searching for a California bank robber who orders the tellers to keep smiling. Hey.
Hey.
Give me all
keep
the money.
Keep smiling.
Keep smiling.
Yeah.
Keep smiling.
Know that you can't got a gun pointed at you. Always count on Steve.
What are they? No. What are they calling? Sure.
That's the what smiley guns bandit? Are for.
Guns. Italian police have, for the first time, videotaped an ultra top secret mafia initiation ritual.
Whoa.
Whoa. Doug, you need to look that up.
Yeah, dude. For real. I feel like.
Can you hear us okay, buddy? Good. We got it. Steve-O got it working.
I wonder craziness. What the ritual was. Oh. All right, this is what we want you to do. Welcome to the club, Vinny. Hey, there's some things you're going to have to do before you actually get in
okay.
to the family.
I'm going to do it. What do I got to do?
Simon says...
Yeah?
Stand on one leg.
Okay, which leg? Just clear it up for me.
Hey, Simon didn't say which leg. It doesn't matter.
I'm
just
right-handed.
Stand on one leg.
I'll stand on my right leg.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
You gotta be smarter if you want to be in the family.
Don Corleone. I'm sorry.
Simon says take your left hand and put it on top of your head.
Okay.
All right. Simon says take your right hand.
Yeah.
And put it on your belly.
Okay.
Now pat your head and rub your belly. Simon didn't say.
Oh no.
Dead, guys! Vinny is dead,
if only he knew how to play Simon Says. Simon Says is a confusing game.
It really is.
You gotta be careful. Doug, in Simon Says, you can't do anything until Simon tells you
to. Yeah, until he tells you to. Don't be like Vinny. He got 86, man. He's sleeping with the fishes.
He is.
You know? If only he had listened.
Concrete shoes, Doug.
Yeah.
Consumer Reports has released its findings on the dangerous levels of arsenic
Ooh.
Found in rice. Great.
Yeah.
I love sushi so much.
I do too. I love rice.
What about... I thought it was the San Francisco treat.
Oh, man. That's rice-a-roni.
It's got rice in it.
Yeah.
Weather experts say that no meteorological term exists. No meteorological term exists. Did I say it wrong again?
No.
Meteorological. Meteorological.
Meteorological.
Meteorological.
Meteorological.
Meteorological.
Yeah, man.
No term exists for the freak snowstorm that hit Buffalo.
Whoa.
But they don't even know what to call it. I know what to call it.
Huh.
Nah, I don't know. Well, yeah. They've got like polar vortex and...
Call it the Snowpiercer.
The Snowpiercer. They need to come up with a good name.
The Chris Evans.
What? Let's see.
That's a good name.
Freak Snowstorm Buffalo.
I like Chris Evans.
Let's see. Freak Snowstorm Buffalo. Nope. Let's see here. Four deaths blamed
Whoa!
On it. Has no meteorological term.
Meteorological.
Meteorologists. Yeah. So meteorological. Meteorologists have no term for Buffalo's freak snowstorm. Five dead. Some motorists have been trapped for nearly 24 hours.
Yeah. Amberlin had to cancel their final Toronto show.
Oh, no.
And then they had to, like, go. It was ridiculous. They had to backtrack to try and get out so that they could make it to Cleveland for their final Cleveland show.
Really?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Mike Carrera put up, because he's on this leg of the tour with them, he put up some photos of, like, where they had to go and, like, the map of what they had to do.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah, this is the snow blowing in. Look at that.
Whoa!
Look at that. Look at that dumb dog. That dumb, dumb dog. What's it doing? Look at that airplane. Look at that dumb, dumb airplane. Ridiculous. I hate snow. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
I love it.
Just wait.
I love the nostalgia of snow because it never snowed in Mississippi, and when it did, just barely snow. I didn't have to go to school. I didn't have to do anything.
Ask Doug, man. This New Mexico weather is crazy, man. We're going to get at least 2.5 inches this year.
2.5 inches,
yeah.
Man.
It's crazy.
It snows way more out here than it does in Mississippi.
Your toes get so cold walking
on it. It snows way more out here than it does in Mississippi.
That's true.
Way more.
That's very true.
It's weird.
What about Nashville? Does it snow in Nashville?
Yeah, it snows in Nashville. Not a lot. Probably about equal to here.
Okay.
But again, way more than Mississippi.
Yeah.
And people flip. You think, okay, the only thing I can equate it to is when it rains and you're driving out here.
Yeah.
Rains at night and you're driving out here, that's what it's like when it barely snows in Mississippi. People are like, when is this?
Yeah. Crash.
Crash. People's newest, sexiest man alive is, of course, Mateo.
No.
Yeah. They emailed me yesterday, and they said, hey, we got you this. And I was like, thank you. Could you send it in writing?
It's Chris Hemsworth.
Who's that?
He's the guy who plays Thor.
What?
Yeah, he was in Thor.
Does he go to CrossFit?
He was in The Dark World.
Did he see my picture I put up yesterday?
I don't know.
My gains I've been getting?
Yeah, man, you're looking good, man.
Real good.
Real good. If you missed that photo, a lot of Mateo.
A lot of Mateo in that photo.
Literally.
A lot of it.
Fateo.
Thank you, Stefan. Hashtag Fateo.
Oh, man.
Secret Service arrested an Iowa man outside the White House on Wednesday who had a hunting rifle and ammunition in his car and said he had driven to Washington because someone told him to go to the White House. Renee Kapheim approached uniform Secret Service officers on foot a block from the White House. The officers interviewed him there, realized that there needed to be further investigation because something wasn't right about him. The man consented to a search of his car where officers found a hunting rifle in his trunk, and the ammunition.
He had junk in his trunk?
Yeah, he had a lot of junk in his trunk. And you know where it landed him?
Huh.
The clink.
Oh.
The slammer.
Oh.
That's right. With Prison Mike. Doug, you ever heard of Prison Mike?
He's for real, man.
He's for real.
He's legit. You don't mess with Prison Mike.
Don't mess with Prison Mike.
You just never do it.
Unique security threats require unique security measures. Acting Secret Service Director Joseph Clancy on Wednesday testified before the House Judiciary Committee, where several lawmakers asked questions about a security breach in September that led to a jumper making his way into the White House. Republican Stephen Cohen of Tennessee had a creative recommendation. Would a moat, like water, 6 feet around, be kind of attractive effective? It's unclear if Cohen was joking or not. Clancy responded unfazed, "Sir, it may be."
Gosh.
Clancy said the Secret Service is looking at doing something that would still be appeasing to the eye, or pleasing to the eye, and keep the historical nature of the White House. But they're definitely trying to buff up security measures. Did that Joker honestly suggest a moat?
That's pretty awesome.
Like, you know, okay, so hear me out.
Okay, okay.
Like a moat, like in medieval times, like a 6 to 7 feet of just water. Maybe you put crocodiles,
but like
within the water, they live there, and they you feed them so that the animal people don't get upset. The PETA's out there; they don't get upset.
But,
so your criminal jumps the fence, and then he encounters the moat, and he's like, "Oh, wait a second!
Oh moat!
I don't know if I can swim. I'm a criminal. I don't think things through very much." Then he's like, I'm going to try it. And he steps into the water, and then, boom, attacked by crocodiles.
Alligators. Love that this was a real idea.
This is a great idea.
This is a fantastic idea.
Do you think that would be, like, attractive, effective? Maybe we could put, like, some sort of garden thing, like a gnome statue could be there.
Nowhere in your answer did you even attempt.
Yeah.
Dang it, I don't know.
No, I'm asking you a question. Do you think this would work?
You are awarded no points.
Okay.
And may God have mercy on your soul.
Thank you.
We are all dumber now for having heard that.
No, you're not. Because moats are really cool.
Moat is the goat. Greatest of all time.
Nope.
That's the t-shirt.
Just say
that's
no.
That's the t-shirt.
To the moat.
No, I love it.
Oh, you could put sharks in there.
Yeah, moat is the goat.
You could put sharks. You could line the White House. What if the moat wasn't what if it was 6 to 7 feet across, but it was like 30 feet deep?
Oh, that'd be
awesome. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, because,
I'd rock
you know,
a moat.
The White House is underground.
Yeah. Wait.
It's got to be.
What?
Like, they've got tunnels under Washington, D.C., where all the conspiracies happen.
Oh, of course.
That's where the Illuminati is, the Masons.
Right.
The Lost Tribe of Israel, they're all under there.
Man.
And so you get the moat goes 30 feet down, and you put freaking sharks in there,
sea snakes. Yeah.
You put crocodiles. You put Kakarnan Megalodon in there.
What?
That's right. The giant ancient ancestor of great white shark.
It's got to be bigger than 30 feet deep.
Those things were 50 feet long.
So you just have one who constantly circles around?
He's circling. He's waiting.
Because if you can somehow time it to where you get behind him, like it'll take him a little time to get around the moat because he can't turn around because he's so big. He's behind me!
Come on!
He's behind me! Come on, man! Come on!
Come on, man. Communities just south of Buffalo, New York are barely beginning to recover after a deadly blitz of more than 5 feet of snow fell like a smart bomb with pinpoint precision on Tuesday into Wednesday. Yet, more heavy snow is still on the way. Worse yet, the National Weather Service Forecast Office in Buffalo is expressing concern that the same towns that were hit so hard through Wednesday will be at the epicenter of the next round of snow bans from Wednesday night through early Friday morning. That's not good.
No.
Man, I hope it doesn't snow like crazy out here.
It's going to.
Here, Doug!
Let me check my trusty app that's never lied to me every day.
What does the Farmer's Almanac say?
Don't we have it?
It's we got it somewhere.
It's right here.
Give it to me.
We really got a Farmer's Almanac.
Let's
how to read that thing?
Yeah, I know how to read it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Freaking smart. I got voted sexiest man alive. Let me see this thing.
That was Chris Hemsworth.
No, it was me. Shut up. I wish you would just believe me sometimes.
Thursday, a week from today.
Weather.
40% chance frozen mix.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Is that like when Elsa and Anna team up?
It's the chance of rain snow.
Rain snow.
Yeah, so it'll be like, it's raining or is it snowing? I don't know, man. Yet the next
Booyah!
Day it's going to be sunny.
Farmer's Almanac says something different.
What does it say?
The Farmer's Almanac is an ancient manuscript passed down year to year.
Yes.
That correctly predicts every single thing inside of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a wizard book. But they couldn't sell it because then all the really conservative people wouldn't buy it. So they call it the Farmer's Almanac. Winter is expected to be another cold one in the eastern half to two-thirds of the nation, with above normal temperatures on average in the west.
We're the west.
We are the west.
Southwest.
Let's see here. Where is... Okay. We expect above normal snowfall from eastern Arizona into the Big Bend of Texas, though.
Oh.
So we're not all the way west.
Nope.
We're in the Central America, like you said the other day.
Yes.
Central America.
We're like right in the middle. Central America, everybody.
We called in the middle. Well, but it says on this handy map. Oh, yeah, look. Cold, snowy. Cold, snowy.
We got it, guys.
Mm.
Really cold. Thanks to the...
Thanks, Farmer's Almanac.
Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, look, and it says cold, snowy, cold, wet up there in Buffalo.
Yep. They got that right.
They got that right.
They must be right.
Farmer's Almanac's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else is pretty freaking cool?
Huh?
Traffic.
Traffic is pretty freaking cool.
Let's take a look at it.
Let me find it.
Okay.
I don't know where I put it.
I do.
I have to find it. It's right.
It's in that
it's
computer.
It's right here, guys. It's right here.
The files are in the computer,
though. I found it. Gosh.
Nothing's going on right now. We got construction on 25 in Paseo, and we have construction down at Rio Bravo Boulevard and Isleta Boulevard Southwest. That roadway is reduced to two lanes. That's your look at traffic right now, because we want to introduce you to our friend Doug, who was also voted 2011 Sexiest Man of the Year.
Oh, man.
Insane Clown Posse. Let's talk to him.
That's pretty great.
Doug, is he on?
Yes.
Yay.
Also 2007 International Man of Mystery.
We can't hear your music.
Do you have music playing?
Is there music, Doug? There it is. Booyah.
All right.
We did it, guys. We're learning. We're figuring stuff out, guys.
It's okay.
Gosh. Doing big things today.
Big things.
Hey.
Today is November the 20th, 2014.
Yeah, it is, baby.
Day 324. There are 41 days remaining in the year. First up this morning, this guy's going to have a pretty busy day today.
Is it Mateo? I have a lot of interviews. People are like, what makes you the sexiest man alive? And I was like, well, number one, it's my brain. I'm super smart. I can figure out most complex equations. I love math. I love science. I also love magic and astrology.
Is it Obama's birthday?
Nope.
Is it Joe Biden?
Yes.
Booyah.
Why is he going to have a busy day today?
Because he's got to go around and talk to me about being the sexiest man alive.
Gosh.
My second reason for getting voted sexiest man alive, I'm kind of tall.
Yeah.
I clock in at a good 6 foot nothing.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
When I was a baby, I used to pray that I wouldn't be short, and I kind of got my wish.
Kind of.
The word on the street is they're going to pass an executive order for amnesty today.
Really?
What does that mean?
In Vegas. Mm-hmm. Tonight, there's supposed to be a big address.
What?
What are you talking about?
Yeah. In Vegas?
Las Vegas?
Huge.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Amnesty.
Yep.
Like that's Amnesty International?
That's the first thing I thought of. I don't know the meaning of the word.
Doug,
everyone that's in the United States right now that's an illegal immigrant will be granted citizenship.
Oh.
Just in Vegas?
Hang on.
No, everywhere. But they're doing it from Vegas. It's supposed to be on television tonight.
Huh.
That's the word on the street.
Why would they do an amnesty thing from Vegas?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Because it's a gamble.
Yeah. Oh, Joe Biden, you're 69.
It says that there's been a huge influx of illegal immigrants lately amidst these rumors of amnesty.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Doug, it's going to be a busy day for Joe Biden.
Yep.
What's next?
No, how old is he?
I don't care.
I said 69.
What'd you say, 69?
Mm-hmm.
65.
72.
Ah!
So close.
Cyndi Lauper.
No.
Captain Lou Albino.
She was big around the same time as Cyndi Lauper. She was in a movie called 10.
Oh,
Bo Derek. Yes.
Yeah. She was the mom in Tommy Boy.
I got it.
69.
Bo Derek is 66.
Bo Derek is 58 years old today.
Nice. I don't know why I thought she was older.
Well, it's okay. It's not like we know her.
That's true. But she's listening. I just dissed her.
Sorry, Bo.
I thought she was
get old. A girl's name. Go ahead, Doug.
Travis Trent.
Nope.
No.
Go way further back than Travis Trent. He was in the Eagles.
Is it Don Henley?
Nope.
Other guy?
Glenn Frey.
The other guy.
Nope.
Joe Walsh.
The other one.
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh.
Sorry, guys.
Travis Trent. Travis Trent.
Sound of country, man. The Eagles, man. The Eagles.
I know. They don't sound like Travis Trent.
It sounded like country.
What did Travis Trent sing? I can't think of it right now.
I can't sing it. Because isn't it he's the dime song? Like, here's a dime or here's a quarter?
Here's a quarter.
Who cares?
Doesn't sound country now.
Joe Walsh is 69.
72.
He is 67 years old
Dang
today.
It. I just wanted somebody to be 69.
Oh, Davey Havoc.
Yes.
Booyah.
What?
Davey Havoc.
From AFI.
Davey Havoc is 45.
I bought Dave this record in college.
Sing really?
Sorrow.
I still think it's their best record.
Yeah, it's really
hands
good.
Down.
Me down tonight. Okay.
Depends on who you talk to. My brother.
How old you say what?
This was the decline. This record, like, began their decline.
Because they weren't like. The songs are like 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Which is Doug's favorite music.
They kind of look like. The Misfits before
and
this
my
record.
Brother's a huge Misfits fan, so
yeah.
Gosh.
December Underground was the second part of December Underground was their decline to me. The second half of the album was not very good.
The Art of Drowning, that's what I was thinking of. I'm like, dude, what was the one that I really enjoyed?
Yeah.
The Art of
Drowning. Is that the one that had like the Halloween looking cover? Yeah, I remember.
That was a great record.
Okay. What'd you say?
Same with The Fire Inside. I think 40-something.
I think he's 39.
He is 39
years
old.
Yeah! Wow! All right.
Booyah. You know, they put out a new record at the end of last year.
I bought it. Burials.
Yes.
I have it.
And he and Jade Puget, the other guy in the band, have another side project.
Did they get married?
Maybe so. Maybe they went to Oregon and got married.
Yeah.
Just like me and Doug are going to do.
Yep.
I was devastated when I found that out because he was such like a tough dude. And I'm just like, Davey Havoc likes boys. What?
Wait, he does?
Are you guys joking right now?
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Yes.
Really?
Like, not just a little.
A lot makes sense now.
Yeah.
That
a does lot make a lot makes
sense. Super over the top. You guys didn't know this?
Uh-uh. No.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry because I remember what happened to me I found out.
It makes sense.
I'm glad you
I'm
said
so sorry,
that.
I'm so sorry, guys.
It makes a lot
because
of sense.
Because we were listening to Love Like Winter, Shannon and I, this last weekend, and we were like, man, these lyrics are really, really weird.
Love Like Winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys. Yeah.
Next up, from my favorite band, the drummer. Not perfect grammar, always perfect timing. Mike stands for money and the D is for diamond.
Dang, dude.
Mike D and the Beastie Boys.
Man, 46.
Mike D is 42.
Mike D is 49 today.
Dang.
And the final birthday?
Oh, is it Danny Pudi? Is it Joel McHale?
Yes,
yeah!
It is Joel McHale's birthday.
Really?
No, he's not.
This makes me happy.
He's not.
He's not?
No.
Okay, well, I'm back to being confused.
Yeah. Time in a tree. Give me some hope to run out of tree. Nobody's there. It could be here.
41.
Up, tied up, dead in a year. Joel McHale is 43.
Joel McHale is 43 years old today.
Yeah, I got done. We've got Joel McHale's.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
He's funny.
That was good.
Community is a great show.
What?
On this day in what year? RCA offered a $35,000 contract for Elvis Presley.
Hey-o.
Wait. Okay. RCA offered him a contract. Was this his first? Because I'm going to say 1954.
You said 54?
Mm-hmm.
53.
1955.
Oh, dang it! So I wonder if that was like post-Hound Dog. Like, I wonder if that was like, hey, like, you did a really good job, like, so now we're going to give you. Yeah. Okay. I read you.
On this day in what year, Andy Kaufman was forever voted off Saturday Night Live by a live phone poll.
Oh man.
When was this? Oh, man.
1981?
1978.
1982.
Dang it! I was right there!
You were right there.
Been off by 1 year twice, guys.
On this day in 1 year, Drew Barrymore became the first 7-year-old to host Saturday Night Live.
Oh, dang it. E.T., Firestarter.
Yeah.
7-year-old. Okay, wait.
She was very young in E.T.
Yes, 7-year-old. I don't think she's much older than
E.T. came out, 82?
So,
was it 82 or was it like 84 or 83? It was like 82 or 83.
It was the early 80s.
And she was probably 3 or 4 in that movie.
See, I'm telling you, I think we're closely in it. So I'm going to say, I was 6 in 84.
Okay.
So she was 7. She's like maybe a couple years older than me.
Okay.
Right? That would make sense, though.
What are you going to say?
I'm going to go with 1984.
1986.
1982 as well.
1982,
the same
okay.
Same episode of SNL.
No way. The same episode?
Yeah.
That was the episode?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow.
On this day, what year, cooking at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in New York City, company president Edward Renzi flipped McDonald's 1 billionth hamburger.
Wow.
The first one had been sold 35 years and 11 months earlier.
Now, here's the thing. I remember being a kid and that having that there already. Like over 1 billion served or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or one whatever. What was it? 1 million? 1 billion?
1 billion.
1 billion. Remember that? Over 1 billion served.
Yeah.
That was like on the marquee.
Yep.
I'm going to say 86.
89.
1984. On this day in what year? Microsoft Windows 1.0 was released.
Oh. It's time for Windows. Open them up.
I saw Zapp and Roger in concert. I say it every time. I don't care.
It's cool. I got voted sexiest man alive.
And Biggie Smalls.
2014.
That's, and Zapp and Roger's the least close part of that
trio. Yeah.
What'd you say, Mateo?
I said I got voted sexiest man alive in 2014.
Oh, yeah. Just needed that one more time.
Thanks, man.
87.
1986.
1985.
Ah!
Dang it!
Oh, snap.
Yep.
I don't even care what you're going to say, Doug.
Okay, well, good, because on this day in what year, Michael Jackson was arrested by police.
Doug!
Of child molestation.
Doug! Doug! No, Doug.
You guys said you didn't care what I said.
Why did you play this song? Why didn't you play something?
I was going to play Love Never Felt So Good.
Oh. Glad you played this one.
Do you remember the time?
Nope.
We fell in love.
Oh, man.
You should have played that. What's the one he wrote about it?
91.
Leave.
No. Why don't you leave me
this
alone?
This is the other one that was the complete circus on every cable news television.
See, man.
Later on.
Oh, this is later on?
A broken bottle top. And what?
I don't want to remember this day in history, Doug. I just don't want to remember it.
Tell me again, which one was this?
I said 91, but it was later.
It was it wasn't that one, but it was
that
one.
It was
later on where it was on like every cable news outlet.
95.
2003.
Oh.
Speaking of controversy, the number one song today.
You told her goodbye. What?
Milli Vanilli.
Oh. Is this Blame It on the Rain?
Yep.
Blame It on the Rain!
Wait. Yesterday, on this day in history, they got like...
They got stripped.
Of their Grammy.
Yep.
Watching this music video and knowing it's not them actually singing is.
What did you
say?
What did you say yesterday? We were close. It was like, I'm going to say 1989. Oh, something.
1990.
1989 is correct.
Good job. They got stripped in 91.
Had that tape.
Was
had
it 91?
They got stripped in 90.
Oh, 90. Okay.
Doug, I love you so much.
Oh, you're wrong.
Today is Peanut Butter Fudge Day. It's Name Your PC Day. It's Use Less Stuff Day. And it's the Great American Smokeout.
Hey. What are we smoking out?
Actually, not supposed to be smoking today.
I'm not crazy because I take the right
I think that's what it is.
Every day.
Every day.
And clean your conscience, clean your thoughts this best. Dude, you picked a good one. We got a great show for you today. I'm excited. Tao's excited.
Hey.
Dougie's excited.
Yeah.
We're all here.
Sugar on the asphalt.
You should be here with us. We have an amazing author from National Geographic joining us for Theology Thursday and a copy of his ridiculously expensive, ginormous book that we're going to be giving away. I'm excited about that.
Can I win that?
You can try.
All right.
You can try. All right. First person who can correctly identify the Shroud of Turin's origin. I'm just kidding. Quick break.
That'll be fun.
Be fantastic. Coming back with more Team Awesome
now.
Morning Party.
Stat.
And it'll be fun.
This is going to be a real party, isn't it?
Ain't no party like a Team Awesome Morning Party, because a Team Awesome Morning Party party don't stop.
This show is so clever.
Turn on the news.
I have a news flash.
We interrupt this breaking news.
Shut up,
breaking news.
I'm still learning the system.
I got voted sexiest man alive 2014.
You did. No, you did. Oh,
breaking
God.
News. what?
Traffic!
Okay. Accident left lane's blocked. I-40 East at 6th Street. Accident left lane is blocked. I-40 East at 6th Street. And if you are eastbound on 40 to the west of that accident, then you have started going slower. And for that, I say I'm sorry. But you need to pay attention to what you're doing. So you don't want to be a secondary accident on top of the first, the primary accident. Also, there's construction on I-25 and Paseo. And it looks like Paseo's starting to get a little stacked up, but it's still moving. And we have construction Rio Bravo Boulevard at Isleta Boulevard Southwest. That roadway's been reduced to 2 lanes because of construction. That's your look at traffic right now.
Traffic brought to you by Sopo.
Sopo.
It's the Calvary Campus Coffee Shop.
Say hey to Annie.
He just rocked us a big old chai. Now we go to get...
You could have said, we just got us a burrito.
We could have.
And it really rocked our socks.
Ah, oh, that would have been good.
Yep.
But I didn't get a burrito.
I did.
I got a breakfast sandwich, like a bagel sandwich. Everything bagel sandwich. Bacon and eggs and cheese. Which I'm sure is going to be wonderful for my sinuses.
Yep.
Just clogging it up with all that dairy and dairiness.
Dairy and dairiness. Dairiness.
So good, you guys.
Byron.
So good.
Byron.
It is Thursday.
Yeah, it is.
Happy Team Awesome Morning Party Day.
Okay, so we have a special guest coming in for Theology Thursday.
That's right, 9 o'clock hour.
He wrote a book.
Jean-Pierre Isbaut.
That's right.
And his book is about the history of Christianity. 2,000 years, he's chronicling from birth of Christ to the present.
Neato.
It's a ginormous National Geographic book.
See, I don't know why we feel like we have to bring in guests to do this. If I wanted to do what he did, I would just Wikipedia it. And my opinion is just as good as his in this world. So, that's my research.
Totes.
I say what I want to say.
Yeah, you say what you want to say.
That's my research. I don't have to do anything.
Say what you need to say, man.
Say what you need to say.
Say what you need to say. You can do it. I believe in you.
Hey, dude. What you doing in there, dude? It's your boy, Meatwad. I was just coming over to say hello, buddy. I love you.
Wow. Our girl, Michelle Schroff, should be in studio today.
Yeah, right.
Or
today's
going to be Clay.
Today's Clay's birthday. Clay Schroff, Aspen Project, today is his birthday. So that's cool.
Yeah. One of them will be hanging out with us today.
We don't know which one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I personally hope it's Clay.
Yeah.
Because Michelle Schroff, me and her are in a fight right now. Over fashion. We're having a fashion battle. No, we're not.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. I know.
Oh, so, hey, wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
We heard, and this is serious, so pray for people at Florida
yes.
State University, because overnight, like a little like
we're
a little
just
past,
getting word.
Yeah, a little past midnight, there was a shooting in the library, which is open 24 hours, and 3 people were injured, I think.
Yeah.
So it's all over everything.
It
right
just
now.
Started hitting
yeah.
all of the news outlets. So,
but again, that's Florida State University. There was a lone gunman. Official gunman shot 3, and the gunman was killed by the campus police.
Gosh. FSU.
So, pray for those people down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
FSU has canceled all classes and exams for Thursday.
505-338-3700 is the phone number. Listen, people. A new study claims that men are better than women with directions.
What's
men
up?
Have evolved to be better at navigating than women.
If that's what evolution is, count me in. I believe in that now. I believe in that. That's America.
According to this new study, men are better with spatial skills.
Yep.
And they're able to travel greater distances and thus have children with more mates, ensuring survival. Not sure what that has to do with anything.
That sounds awesome.
That's really in the study.
That's like Genghis Khan right there.
Ladies, prove us wrong. I want the best, like, my husband got us lost doing A, B, and C.
Okay. Man.
Are you a navigator?
Yes.
Will you be my wingman?
Yes. I will drive us into the oblivion. We will fly into the sunset of death together, and I will be the one putting the compass heading up.
Okay.
That's what I do, man.
Ice.
Hey,
man.
All right. That's what I do. I walk in, I get in the airplane, and I fly straight in to the horizon. That's what I do.
505-338-3700, the phone number. Does it count anymore now that we've got, like, Google Maps and everything? Can you still get lost? Is
yeah.
this possible?
Oh, you totally can. You can still miss turns. You can totally still miss turns.
Yeah.
You can ask Dawn. I remember we were going somewhere for Christmas a couple years ago, and I missed the exit, and the next exit wasn't for like 10 miles.
No.
And then we had to turn around and go back. I was so mad. So mad. And it was my fault. I was like, dang it. I hate it when I miss exits. I just want to go the correct way. Because I drove a lot in the van.
Right.
You know, so it's way worse when you have a van and trailer and you make a wrong turn.
All right.
It's like, man, I thought the Rocky Mountains would be a lot rockier than this. That John Denver is full of crap. That's how you feel when it happens.
Oh, man. New study claiming that men really are better than women with directions. We're better at navigating because we have better spatial skills and are able to travel greater distances.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, better. Better at life. Better at things. Ladies, dismantle it.
Nope.
505-338-3700, the phone number. 338. I've never gotten this far in the Top Gun theme. I didn't realize they broke it down into like a rap battle.
It's really awesome.
Wow.
Heck yeah, babies.
Yeah.
If you're a girl out there and you feel like you're better than dudes when it comes to directions, give us a call.
We're just jamming some Top Gun.
Just jamming. Just doing what dudes do, man. Just going the right way all the time and getting directions correct. Listening to Top Gun soundtrack.
This is exactly why I don't think we're better at directions, because this is what happens to me in the car.
You get caught up
in
the song.
I get lost in the music. I'm just like, yeah!
Woo!
You need Top Gun theme!
You gotta be in a band, because then you learn how to get lost in the music and still drive the car.
Oh, I can't do it. Chrissy and I recently took a road trip, and there were multiple times where it was like, there! Ah! Oh.
No.
All right, I gotta turn around. I gotta do this. You do this better-er. Gosh. 505-338-3700. I got some crazy stories for you this morning.
We do. Is nobody going to call in and defend the female race?
St. Louis Rams center Jason Brown. He quit football.
Why?
He had a $37 million contract.
Well, that's a good reason to quit, if you ask me.
And he quit to do something he's never done before.
Become a figure skater.
Become a North Carolina farmer. He quit because he wanted to be a full-time farmer. He's now on a mission to feed the state's residents who are hungry.
Boom!
He purchased 1,000 acres of farmland and started growing crops like sweet potatoes and cucumbers. Of course, he's never actually farmed a day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a little tricky.
I think that is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So he learned the tricks of the trade from watching videos on YouTube. Not
yes.
being funny.
Hang
Not
on.
Being funny.
Well, YouTube yeah. is a very serious endeavor nowadays.
He's calling the farm the First Fruits Farm.
First Fruits.
Yeah.
That's biblical.
Yeah, I know. As part of his plan, he's donating the first fruits of every harvest to area food pantries.
Boom.
Gosh.
Okay, I'm quoting here, so you might get offended, but there's a movie on YouTube called Screw This Job, I'm Going to Be a Farmer.
Wow.
A full movie. I wonder if he watched that movie and he was like,
I'm going to be a farmer.
That's me, man.
He just recently finished his first harvest of a 5-acre plot of sweet potatoes, a whopping 100,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
Which he donated entirely to the needy.
That's really cool. That's
Guys,
really, really cool.
I'm playing the wrong music. I grabbed the NFL music when really I didn't realize what I needed was this.
That's right.
Because this dude,
we found him,
is a superhero.
We found him. He's real. And he's a farmer.
Jason Brown. Center for the St. Louis Rams. $37 million contract, man.
So, okay, did
he... Left it behind.
He left that behind. Did he already get any of the money?
I have no idea. I'm assuming he had to have, considering the fact that he bought 1,000 acres of farmland in North Carolina.
Jason Brown's harvest. There yeah. it is, right there. Oh, yeah, talks about his faith and farming.
That's cool,
Dude,
man.
We should try to get an interview
we
with this Joker.
We should definitely try and get
that
an interview
awesome.
With this Joker. Speaking of the NFL and superheroes, Cam Newton... Constantly, like, rips his shirt open, pretending like he's Superman.
Yeah.
Apparently not Superman.
What?
When it comes to passwords on things like Twitter.
Oh, no.
Guys, tip of the day.
Tip of the day.
If you're a celebrity. No, if you're anybody.
If you're anybody.
And your password is virtually the same as your username.
Yeah.
You cannot be surprised when someone figures it out and you are hacked.
Hey, if you guys are looking for a good password, you can always try 12345. Or if you want to trick the hackers, 54321.
Boom. Yeah, Cam Newton tweeted out, Richard Sherman is overrated. And I want to get released by at Panthers.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this was while he was at practice. Cam Newton didn't really tweet those things. No, his account was hacked because his password...
Gosh. What was it?
Cam Newton, man. Auburn. Auburn grad, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn. Go Auburn. Virtually the same as his Twitter account. So it was like, at Cam Newton. Password? At Cam Newton. 01. <I don't know. laughs> Good job, Cam Newton!
You know what, though? I can see him sitting there and thinking, I bet if I make it so close to my username but add a couple numbers, they'll never get it.
They'll never guess.
Why would anybody do that?
I don't know what it really... It says virtually the same. It doesn't say what his actual password is.
I wonder if it was
just like his name and his jersey number.
It sounds like a sixth grader hacked his account.
Yeah.
From the tweets. Like, that's who figured it out.
Richard Sherman's a dumb.
Richard Sherman is a jerk. Richard Sherman is so dumb. He's smelly. He's really smelly, and I've smelled him, and it was smelly. Richard Sherman is a smelly jerk.
Oh, man. I love it.
I would love to be released from at Panthers. And the kid's going, yeah, my dad says
we got him, man.
My dad says he stinks, so I got him. I got him, Dad.
They're
what
in the
are
same
you talking
division
about,
as the Bucks, so
Nut.
This makes me very, very, very happy.
Oh, man. I was telling Dawn that today was a busy day for me. I said, hey, I was like, I have many interviews today.
Tongue in cheek.
And she said, coolness. And I said, because I've been voted the sexiest man alive of 2014. So it's going to be a long day. And then she said, LOL, I understand. And I said, it's okay. And then she said, I'm going to be really busy doing interviews too. I've had so many applications submitted to be my second and third husbands.
Oh.
And I was like, dang it.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I'm going to say,
yep.
I'm going to say, well, are any of them the sexiest man alive 2014?
Gosh. Oh, man. Guys, speaking of harvests, trees, farmland, doing great things like that, I got a story for us.
I got a story too, but it's got nothing to do with that.
A way to reward people for having face-to-face interaction instead of staring into the void known as your smartphone.
Yeah.
There's an app for that. Thanks to three 20-year-old Singapore students, they won $30,000 in funding to develop Apple Tree.
I'm pretty sure I've seen an Apple Tree before.
App works like this. Two or more people touch the phone together, and the phone becomes disabled.
Whoa.
And a virtual Apple Tree grows on each screen as long as they continue touching. The apples that keep growing as time passes can then be harvested and turned in for a reward such as discounts at real-life stores. That feels like you're both still going to be staring at a stupid phone screen. That doesn't sound like they solved anything. It just sounds like now, instead of just you staring at your phone, you're going to have your friend staring at your phone.
No, man. I got this. I love watching the grass grow. So if I can do that virtually, if I can watch a tree grow...
And get a discount at GameStop?
Yes, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll be like, did you see that? Did you see that? Gosh. It moved. I have a story.
All right. Let's do this.
I need sad music.
Sad music. Sad music. You need sad...
That's right. Even sadder than Dixie.
Whoa.
That's right.
Whoa.
I'm waiting.
Where are you?
I'm right here.
Not you.
Oh. I thought you got... I thought maybe you got lost.
Because your eyes,
directional,
I get lost.
Your directional incapabilities. If you're looking for the happiest country on earth, don't look to the US and A.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, y'all.
At least that's the message from the Happy Planet Index, which rates 151 countries, not planets. So I'm confused.
Yeah.
Because if you would think it would be Happy Country Index, right, Doug? Not Happy Planet Index. I feel like this is a group of liars that has assembled to try to dupe me into believing another bit of factual information that's actually just some kind of weird rumor. I believe stuff like that all the time. Doug, have you ever received a chain letter? I have too, and I sent it out, and I'm still not dead, so I know it worked. That's how you know. Anyway, the Happy Planet Index finds the happiest country in this whole entire Earth is Costa Rica.
What?
Followed by Vietnam.
Come on,
Colombia,
man.
And Belize.
Obviously don't know.
The index rates the US and A as the 105th happiest.
105th?
105th. How many countries are in this world, Doug?
At least 109.
Doug.
I don't know.
How many countries? Hang on. I've got this resource I like to call the internet. It's a loose resource.
America came in 105th
for
happiest?
Countries...
Are they in the world?
Okay, hang on. 196.
Nice.
I don't know if this is reliable because this is the internet. Because Taiwan is not considered a country by many people. That would bring the count down to 195.
Oh, okay.
So we got about 105 out of 196.
So we're like 50.
I'm going to say there's 197 countries because I believe in a hollow earth.
Yes.
I think Hollow Earth counts because it's in the planet.
I can accept
it's
that.
It's not on the crust.
Right.
It's within.
Right.
It's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah.
You count the bread.
Absolutely.
That's the sandwich.
Right.
Part.
Right.
Why can't you count the peanut butter and jelly too?
You do.
And that's what Hollow Earth is. It's the peanut butter and jelly to the sandwich of the earth.
I like that.
Anyway,
it's according, below the crust.
Yes, below the crust, if you will. What else? What's below your crust? Tell us. Call 505-338-3700. According to the website, the HPI measures what matters. The extent to which countries deliver long, happy, sustainable lives for the people that live in them. The index uses global data on life expectancy, experience, well-being, and ecological footprint to calculate this. Have you noticed that I switch between data and data?
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
Why?
I love it.
Do you do that with Route and Root?
Yep.
What about Pirates of the Caribbean or Caribbean Jerk? It's Caribbean Jerk. I would only say Caribbean.
It's Caribbean.
No, it's Caribbean
Jerk. It's
the jerk.
Caribbean Jerk.
No, it's Caribbean Jerk.
That's the nickname
jerk.
I had in college. And I was like, no, I'm from here, guys. And I said, no, you're the Caribbean Jerk. And I said, well, let's say Caribbean Jerk.
What about caramel?
Caramel?
Yeah.
Caramel.
Caramel apples.
Caramel apple.
Ow!
Mm-hmm.
Ow!
What about yellow?
Yellow.
Yellow or yellow.
Or what?
Yellow.
Nobody says it like that.
Yellow. Doug, what color is the sun? Yellow. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, right.
Doug said yellow.
You sound Russian. Like,
yellow.
What is that?
The sun is yellow. No, I just sound slow. I don't sound Russian.
Whoa.
Yellow.
Whoa.
Yellow.
Slovenic.
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 Yeah.
In fact, the HPI claims that economic activity in countries, because some people were wondering, well, is it economy? Is it money? But they say, no, that's particularly untrustworthy. Nations that are richer than other nations apparently are not happier in this country, in this U.S. and day, in this world, on our planet. Oddly, the HPI doesn't seem to measure human rights abuses, no matter how they might be measured. This must explain why China is rated as the 60th happiest country, despite the fact that it is also one of the biggest human rights abusers in the world.
Mm.
Another oddity of this measurement of happy, quote-unquote, nations is that Venezuela comes in at 9th place. Now, why is that odd, Doug? I'll tell you why. A recent New York Times article noted that Venezuela is more dangerous than Iraq. And yeah, 9th happiest. So if you can handle it, you're stoked to live there, if you're alive. In Iraq, a country with about the same population as Venezuela, this comes from The Times in 2010, there were 4,644 civilian deaths from violence in 2009. According to the Iraq body count. Mm. In Venezuela that year, the number of murders climbed above 16,000. It hasn't gotten any better since 2010. This year, Caracas, Venezuela, came in as the second most dangerous city in the world. And Caracas wasn't the only Venezuelan city on the most dangerous list. Barquisimeto, Ciudad Gano, a bunch of Venezuelan cities made the list. Yet, Venezuela isn't just a little better than the USA in the Happy Planet Index. It is far and away happier.
Gosh.
We're 105th.
This is terrible.
And we are where the world's wealth is.
I feel like I have an idea of why we're not as happy as we should be.
It's because girls are worse at direction than guys.
Well, it has to do with image.
What is it?
I was just thinking about our photo we posted this morning.
Okay.
We got to get to a question of the day.
I would love to.
Facebook.com/mystaticradio. Now, did you post the article or did you just post the photo of the Barbie?
I think Celeste posted that
yesterday.
Yeah, she posted the photo and the article.
Okay. So Facebook.com/mystaticradio. We're looking at this doll with realistic proportions that's going on sale. Barbie. New competition, yo. This is a realistically proportioned doll named Lamely.
Lamely!
Because nothing says realistic like the name Lamely.
That makes sense to me. I've known at least 6 people with that name.
The doll was designed by Nikolai Lam.
Lamely.
Okay, it's starting to come around. It's going to be made available for Christmas gifts this Wednesday. Doll was the center of a very successful Kickstarter campaign that raised over $500,000?
So is this...
For a realistic doll?
Yes.
Unlike Barbie, Lamely was designed to have the proportions of an average 19-year-old. Now, to study how children would respond to Lamely, the group of second graders were given a Lamely doll and a Barbie doll. They were asked to describe both dolls, what they liked about the doll, and ultimately, which doll they'd rather play with if given the chance. All the children chose the Lamely doll as their number one choice.
Really?
All of them. Yes.
What the heck kind of name is Lamely?
Lamely.
Lamely.
To be more realistic, Lamely actually comes with a sticker extension pack complete with cellulite, mm-hmm. acne, and freckles. And now I'm irritated.
Yes.
Why are freckles lumped in with cellulite and acne? I have freckles, and when I was a kid, I tried to scrub them off because people made fun of me because they said that was fly poop.
Mistake.
Gosh!
Mistake.
Don't you
freckles.
Love freckles with acne and cellulite?
Freckles are the best, guys. I don't know if you know.
Freckles are angel kisses, you jerks!
Freckles come out during the summer to celebrate the sunshine.
No, what?
And then they retreat in the winter so they can stay warm and live.
505-338-3700 is the phone number. That's 505-338-3700. Adults, if you think this isn't accurate or realistic, I found a new study that shows that when stores use skinny mirrors, they sell a lot more clothing.
Forever 21.
According to a study, 88% of shoppers at a lingerie store made purchases when they stood in front of a slimming mirror, compared with 73% who looked into an actual regular mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Secret shoppers on an Oklahoma television news crew sent somebody out to a mall and found slimming mirrors all over the place. That means mirrors either bent slightly or placed a bit higher to make the shopper look slimmer. And sales at those shops were up. Body image, y'all. Body image.
Body image.
505-338-3700.
I just found a picture of this doll with the acne sticker on it.
Yeah.
That's for real, man.
That's totally real, guys.
Oh, there's a mole. There's the ability to blush.
What's okay? 505.
She's blushing because she's eating those
338-3700. You know they've got this chick doll, Lamely.
What is that?
That's a that is your appendix.
Is that a prison scar?
It's a scar from when she had her appendix taken out. It's real life, dude. Gosh, get with the program. Get with the program. We got to take a quick break. Coming back, we want your thoughts on this doll, 505-338-3700. Now, they're making an average woman doll.
Mm-hmm.
Cellulite, acne. What would you do for a dude's doll?
Ooh, a dude's doll.
If they were going to make a Ken, what would Ken look like? 505-338-3700 or facebook.com/mystaticradio. Quick break. Right back with more Team Awesome Morning Party.
Now.
Static.
That show is the broadcast equivalent of being punched in the face.
Team Awesome Morning Party. On Static Radio.
That's good, man. Good.
Okay.
This sucks!
No, it doesn't. Let's take a look at traffic. We've got construction. Oh, my gosh. This traffic map looks like the you put the acne sticker on the Barbie. The,
oh, no.
The proportional Barbie right
oh,
now.
Oh, no, y'all.
Oh, no. There's an accident off to the side. Paseo del Norte at golf course. We have another. Oh, there's a stalled vehicle off to the side. I-25 South at Osuna, San Mateo Boulevard. There's an accident. Two lanes are blocked at Wyoming and Osuna. There's an accident. The left lane is blocked. I-40 West at Eubank. And there's an accident at I-40 East at 6th Street. All of the roads around these accidents are stacked right now. So if you're going to be around any of those areas, good luck. You need to maybe plan ahead, use an alternate route or something. Also, we have construction Rio Bravo Boulevard at Isleta Boulevard, Southwest, and of course at I-25 and Paseo. So, to retrace our steps, there's an accident off to the side at Paseo and Golf Course.
Okay.
There's a stalled vehicle off to the side at I-25 South at Osuna and San Mateo. There's an accident. Two lanes are blocked. Wyoming Boulevard at Osuna. Did I just say Boulevard? Accident. Left lane's blocked. I-40 West at Eubank. And there's an accident. I-40 East at 6th Street. Boulevard.
It's good.
That's your look at traffic.
Traffic brought to you by Solomon's Porch, 4001 Osuna Road Northeast on the Calvary campus. Phone number is 505-338-3669. Welcome to Team Austin Morning Party. Steve O'Mateo hanging out with you. And in studio, the birthday boy.
You know, I don't always party in the morning, but when I do, it's with the Team Morning Party.
Of awesome.
Of awesome. But yes.
It's the awesome team of morning. It's a party time.
It's my birthday. I'll say it however I want.
Yes, sir.
Whoa.
I'll cry if I want to.
I will too. I'll cry with you.
You know what? He's got a point. He's got a point.
I'll cry with you, Clay.
What?
I don't even care.
Why would you? Okay.
Oh. Thank you.
No probs.
Thank you.
No probs. It is your birthday.
It's
so,
your birthday. It's you know, your birthday.
Happy birthday.
It is a good birthday today.
2019.
It's 29 anniversary.
Yeah.
That's good.
What you know, like 29-10?
Yeah, a little more.
Really?
Nah.
I turned 48 today.
Shut your mouth hole.
Real
Are you
numbers.
Serious?
You know really? What? Well, look at the white. You know, first your hair turns white, and then it turns loose.
Yeah, but I assume the hair turns white because you have 10 kids, man.
No, those are the wrinkles.
Yeah, okay. Incredible. Clay Schraub from the Aspen Project in studio today.
Hey, we had a great turnout.
Yeah, Sunday. I wanted to talk about this.
It was awesome.
Mitch was telling us about it.
Yeah, Mishers was there.
You know, I think we had 17 different ministries.
Wow.
That came, set up tables.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
There he is.
You know what? I just see a movement, and it's hard to get people to come out to do forever decisions in their lives.
Yeah. Well, that's a big choice. That's a big decision.
It is. But you know what? It's a mandate by Christ himself that tells us to care for the widows, the orphans, and basically anybody that doesn't have a voice. We live in a country, really, where it's easier not to do something. But if we don't do something, we ain't going to get anything done. So we got 5 to 10% of the people doing 90% of the work.
Yeah.
That's true.
Very, very true.
So, but we had a great turnout.
Yeah.
Lots of people signed up to help us with Project Zoe and Aspen Project. And then people were, the Bear Foundation was there. Holt International was there. I'm trying to remember everyone. 9 Months Ministry was there. We had Reload Love spoke. We had, help me, Mary LeCue.
You're on the webcam, so people can already see you
guys,
in that really
also,
cool hat.
Skylar Schroff. She's here. She's got a cool hat.
You know, and Skylar is really here. We have a huge event coming up. We're having you have the Black Friday sales at all the stores.
Yeah.
And then you go home and you feel guilty. So we want to give you a time of redemption. We're going to call it White Saturday. And they're going to go out Project Zoe. And they're going to open the doors and invite you to come in and see what we do. But we want you to bring your new and like new clothes and donations and cash and stuff like that, and donate. No, but seriously, you know.
So if you're crazy that goes out on Thursday for the chaos.
Yep.
Not
is it
even
on
Black
Saturday
Friday.
Or Friday?
Saturday.
White Saturday.
White Saturday.
So you go out Thursday, Friday, you get all the crazy stuff, and then Saturday you redeem yourself.
Yeah, you
totally
go through your closet.
Totally redeem yourself.
But we need help. We need you to help spread the word. Because otherwise it won't be successful.
That's true.
Yeah.
So White Saturday. The day after Black Friday.
Yeah, and it'll be posted on our website.
All right.
Okay.
It'll be posted on our Facebook.
Of course, we always link it at our Facebook page, facebook.com/MyStaticRadio, if you would like details on that. Speaking of Project Zoe, it's interesting. We've been talking this morning about body image and the female. And there's this new doll that's coming out this Christmas that's supposed to be more in line with real life. She comes with cellulite stickers and acne stickers. Freckle stickers, which kind of made me mad because I have freckles. How come that's like in the mix? Yeah, we're freckled.
Skylar is a beautiful child and she has freckles.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. It's like, why don't we just sell superhero dolls that don't look like superheroes? They look like normal people.
That's what we're saying. If they could create a dude doll, what would we have?
No, we don't want a normal.
Like a gut?
We don't want that. Do we really?
Want that? I don't know. Well, this doll, according to research, this doll raised a lot of money already because, you know, they couldn't just
Because a bunch of collectors are buying it.
So, no.
Little girls are not playing with this.
Wrong! The doll was designed by Nikolai Lam. It becomes available as a Christmas gift this week. It was the center of a successful Kickstarter campaign. They raised over $500,000 to manufacture this doll. Her name's Lamely. She was designed to have the proportions of an average 19-year-old. And so they studied this, how children would respond to an average-looking doll versus a Barbie doll. So they took this big group of second graders. They were given the Lamely doll and the Barbie doll. They were asked to describe the dolls, what they liked about each doll, and which doll they would rather play with if given the choice, and 100% of the children chose the realistic Lamely doll over the Barbie doll.
That's because it was...
Isn't
no
that
way.
Interesting?
You know what? You're talking to the wrong guy, because I married a Barbie doll.
Oh,
I'm not going to go average. Thank you very, very much.
Boom.
Wow. No one wants to have average.
What?
No
way. Man. But it's just real life.
Okay.
People have some people get their appendix taken out. You can put a little appendix scar on them.
You can.
If you got your appendix removed.
Yeah, people are buying this. They're going to put it in. They're going to leave it in the wrapper and hope that it's worth money someday.
Yeah, it comes with the sticker extension pack. Cellulite, freckles, acne. A realistic
That's what I want to buy is some acne. Think about it. We don't watch movies because it's realistic.
Yeah, but these dolls, it's like the image that you're putting into them.
No, I agree. And I think there's a lot. Let's just go to the realism of
it.
Okay. I think there needs to be the magazine covers we have and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
We are giving our young girls a false sense of what a woman should be.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, I learned, my Sierra has a blog that is just amazing.
Really?
No, like crazy amazing.
How did I not know this?
No, we're going to send it to you because I'm going to tell you, it's deep. But dads find out stuff. You go, really, baby?
Yeah.
You really felt that way?
Right.
Because let me just tell you, the perfect little Christian homes, there is no such thing.
Right.
In fact, she calls it the perfect little Christian girl.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
So look it up. But let me just tell you, it's raw.
Yeah.
And as a dad, you go, I could cry right now because I'm that protective dad.
Right.
You can't protect your kids against everything, and nor do you know everything. So there is body image issues, and But I think we need to be careful too, because I think a lot of times with our toys and with our movies and with our radio and with our playing, we want to live in a semi-imaginary world where yeah. everything is perfect. You know, I think that's that place of escape. Mm-hmm. I think if we and we also need to be real. You know, is it politically correct to have a perfect, you know, Barbie doll with a tiny, tiny waist out of proportion? Maybe not.
Right.
But I think this would be a fad. I think this is something that will catch on. What a great idea if they put education behind it.
Right.
Real, true education that tells girls that you are beautiful in the sight of God. Because any training that we put out there that doesn't put God at the top of it, because it doesn't matter what I think my wife or my daughters or
right.
people look like. What matters is what God views you as.
Yeah.
And, you know, 100% of women are beautiful in the eyes of God.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's crazy where, as we started talking about this doll, more studies we found this morning, a new study showed that stores have started using skinny mirrors to sell more clothes. An Oklahoma television news crew sent a secret shopper to a mall, and they found slimming mirrors all over the place. Mirrors that are either bent slightly to make you look thinner or placed higher to make the shopper look slimmer. And according to the study, 88% of shoppers at this lingerie store made purchases when they stood in front of a slimming mirror compared to the normal mirror that they put up. Only 73% bought the lingerie when they were looking into a normal, regular, real mirror.
I go to the gym and I look bigger at the gym. I get home and I go, hey, what happened to the guy who was at the mirror at the
right.
gym? Huh? What happened to him?
Yeah. Now you got to go back to the gym.
Yeah, I'm just going to get a different mirror.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Man, Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio if you'd like information on Project Zoe, on White Saturday, and all that is going on there. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned this last Sunday and all of the organizations that were involved and all the people that signed up. How can people help with Aspen Project or Project Zoe right now?
You know what? If you want to imprint Christ on a child's heart, or you're a church, or you're an organization and you don't know what to do, you don't know where God's calling you, call us.
Yeah.
We set up meetings throughout the week. We'll talk with you, figure out where God has, because not everyone's called to foster and adopt.
Yeah.
LifeQuest was there with us, and they go into the juvenile detention centers and minister to kids that are there. And you remember, I always tell people this: if I would have got caught for everything I did, I'd still be in jail.
Right.
And that's a real deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't judge those kids that are in prison, but those guys are making an amazing difference. They need men. If you're a man, I don't want no little boys. If you're a man,
right,
and you want to imprint Christ on a young person's heart, and by the way, they need women too.
Yeah.
But they need it desperately. And here's the Aspen Project. People ask what we do. You know what we do is we plug you in with organizations or where Christ would want you. Because ministry, it's not about business. If it was a business, I'd hog y'all. But it's ministry. So we're going to plug you into places. Like the Bear Foundation needs these foster parents that are going to work with advanced, what is it called? It's foster kids, but it's a higher level of foster care. Kids that have had maybe a little bit more abuse or coming out of a psych ward. But let me just tell you, they give you the training and they equip you, and it's amazing. 9 months ministries and all of those organizations are standing out on the front lines, making a difference outside abortion clinics.
Yeah.
And you know, my favorite is when we actually look at. We want to save all the babies, but after a woman has an abortion, we also want to save her soul and let her know that there's forgiveness and there's post-abortive counseling. So there's a ton of, and I keep trying to remember all the organizations that were there. We had CYFD. It was just amazing. So there are places for everybody to imprint Christ on a child's heart.
Right.
And we'll help you. If you're a church and you want to start an organization, listen, we don't want your people. I don't have enough time to run my own ministries.
Right.
Let us, you know, take up part. Special thanks to Adam Kane at Hope EV Free. He has an organization that gets teams all the churches together and comes up with a ministry alliance. And they're at Covenant Church at 11 o'clock, I believe,
today.
New Covenant.
All right.
So, you know, just stuff like that. We got to plug people in.
Yeah.
As the Christian community, we need to stop drawing circles around our church And start reaching out to the other churches and agree where we agree. And on our differences, if it's non-salvation, if it isn't leading someone to hell, then we need to join hands and love one another and make a difference.
Yeah.
Nothing frustrates me more than we as the churches of Albuquerque specifically. I have such a hard time getting us to unite. So, stop it!
Yeah. Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio if you'd like all the information on Aspen Project, Project Zoe, everything going on, and of course, White Saturday.
Yeah.
White Saturday. You know what?
Great concept.
Guys, go out and buy stuff.
Yeah.
Or gift cards.
Yeah.
You know, the beauty of gift cards is if I have someone come in, no matter what their size, I can go buy them clothes.
True.
And we have it all the time. We have emergency stuff comes up where we have a young lady who finds out that she's pregnant and needs some help with maternity wear, and we don't have enough maternity wear. So if you're ladies out there and you have maternity wear, I have mannequins that are pregnant, so I need your maternity wear.
There you go.
Help us. It's and thank you so much for what you guys do here, because I can tell you this. When we cry out for help from the pulpit that you guys have given us, people answer. So yeah. The static listeners, the people who are listening right now, have been extremely faithful to come alongside us when we need help.
Yeah, dude, amen to that. Thanks to everybody who has helped out, who has chimed in, been a part of it. And again, if you'd like to be a part of it and you're not already, Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio. Check out all the details there, how you can get involved. I want to remind you guys, coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to do Theology Thursday. Our boys, oh, yeah. Brian Nixon, Jared Petro in studio, and a National Geographic author on the phone with us, who just chronicled the history of Christianity from the birth of Christ to the present. It is a ginormous book. We're going to have him on the phone talking about the history of the church, the history of Christianity. And so we're really excited for that. That's coming up at 9 a.m. Going to keep the music going right now. Some Arcade Fire for you. It's Team Awesome Morning Party.
Now.
Static.
We have fabulous music for the fantastic
Arcade Fire.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Team Awesome Morning Party. Making your morning a little more awesomer. Ist, a little more awesomest.
Hey, y'all!
Okay, so all of those accidents that we talked about a little bit ago?
Yeah.
Gone.
Weird!
Except for stalled vehicle off to the side, I-25 South at Osuna Road, San Mateo Boulevard. That's exit 230 on 25 South. We have construction at I-25 in Paseo, and you know it's always a little congested around there, so be careful and pay attention to what you're doing. Lots of lane shifting. Yeah. Shifting like shadows over there. And we have construction Rio Bravo Boulevard at Isleta Boulevard Southwest. That roadway is reduced to 2 lanes. That's your look at traffic.
Traffic brought to you by Solomon's Porch, 4001 Osuna Road Northeast on the Calvary campus. Phone number is 505-338-3669. It's 505-338-3669. If you're just joining us, a new doll is making waves.
Yep.
Her name is Lamely. Lamely. She was designed by Nikolai Lam. Becoming available this week, the doll was the center of a successful Kickstarter campaign, raised over $500,000 to manufacture a realistic-looking doll. Unlike Barbie, this one's designed to have the proportions of an average 19-year-old. They even did a study with this doll and a group of second graders. They were given Lamely and Barbie. They were asked to describe both dolls, which one they liked, and ultimately which one they would rather play with if given the chance. And all of the children chose Lamely as the number one choice.
Lamely!
Lamely comes with a sticker extension pack complete with cellulite, freckles, acne. Good idea, bad idea. We've gotten a lot of comments on this. Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio. What are the people saying,
the
man?
The people are lots to say, and let's read about it right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Ashley says, number one, you guys will like this magazine. This magazine's Photoshop policy. And then she linked us with something. And
ooh,
then she wrote, don't say no one wants average, I'm wanted. And I tried to point out to her that Clay's point was that no one is just average.
Right.
Even if we view ourselves that way.
Right.
But anyway, Tiana has some great stuff to say. She says it's not gross at all. And this was in response to a girl named Amanda who said, this is gross and stupid. Some people have cellulite because of poor diet and they don't work out enough. Fat gets stored as pockets of fat. Why can't people just leave Barbie alone? We grew up playing with Barbies. I don't see anything wrong with them. So Tiana wrote, it's not gross at all. Most people have cellulite. Even men can have it. And if it's caused by weight gain, it's impossible to lose fat because fat cells... It's impossible to lose because fat cells just shrink. They don't disappear. Also, it can be caused by genetics, so thinner people can have it too. Stretch marks are also normal, and they happen from any type of rapid growth, whether it's fat growth, muscle growth, or pregnancy. So even though I do agree that Barbies are definitely not the main underlying cause for self-esteem issues in young girls, nothing about this new normal Barbie is gross. It's just normal.
Yeah.
Solid.
Solid!
Laura says if they made a realistic male doll, he would have a beer gut, face scruff, and his name would be Kip. Thebe says, Joe. He's describing the perfect male. Joe, complete with tribal and barbed wire tattoos, removable mullet, eyebrow ring, wife beater tank top, socks and sandals, lifted truck, stack of unpaid child support bills, Bud Light cans.
Wow.
America. Mark says, from the looks of her outfit and body, it's just your average trailer park girl. Mateo knows what's up. Boom, shakalaka. I have no idea what's
what?
Up. I don't. Is that because I'm from Mississippi?
I mean, I get it.
Michael Harvey says it would be fun to put one in my passenger seat and watch the reactions. Carpool lane. Would have to turn my CB off due to comments from other truckers. Don't do that, Michael. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Laura says she played with stuffed animals and Ninja Turtles as a kid, so she's not really into this new Barbie. And Bill simply replies with, hot. He thinks it's hot.
Good old Bill, man. You can always count on him for just, like, solid, solid comments.
Solid comments. Again,
solid!
Celeste posted this yesterday afternoon, and we wanted to carry on the conversation because it's definitely making headlines.
Yeah.
This body image is a huge deal in our culture.
Absolutely.
And so we've got an average Barbie named Lamely that was kickstarted, and it's available for the holidays.
Such a terribly unfortunate name.
But you said that kids, when they were given the option, picked this up more often, right?
Yeah, they picked this doll up. This was the one they loved. So,
pretty neat.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio. Tell us your thoughts there for that. We got to take a peek back into music because we're doing stuff behind the scenes.
And we're gearing up for Theology Thursday. We've got author Jean-Pierre Isbots.
That's right. Producer Doug, you better stick to the phones.
Stick to the phone, Doug.
He's calling us, Doug.
That's right. So we can't miss
Jean-Pierre Isbots.
He is the author of National Graphic's new book, The Story of Christianity, a chronicle of Christian civilization from ancient Rome to today. He also wrote In the Footsteps of Jesus. So he's been writing and stuff. We're going to have him over the phone, and Beenix and Jarrett are going to give him a hard time.
It's just Beenix.
Oh, it's just Beenix?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm getting word from my producers.
Jarrett is lazy.
Jarrett will not be here, but that's okay, because Beenix is the historical, biblical guy.
Jarrett's not
so
lazy. Don't get
really,
me
that's who we wanted today anyway.
That's true. We didn't even want Jarrett. We don't want you here, Jarrett, with your fantastic hair and your beautiful eyes. What? We don't want you here.
Okay, that's coming up, guys. Steam Awesome Morning Party.
Now.
Static.
There's a fight to be won for the love you find.
What are you talking about?
What kind of talk is this anyway?
Theology Thursday with Steve-O and Mateo. Featuring pastors Brian Nixon and Jared Petro.
Here it comes.
Let's begin.
And begin.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Welcome to Theology Thursday.
It's true.
Excited for today's show.
Very excited about today's broadcast.
Pastor Brian Nixon in studio with us. Jarrett can't make it. He's busy doing his nails.
But you know what? We've got a real scholar.
I'm excited.
Online.
Yeah.
Who is really going to give us an overview of the story of Christianity. So this is thrilling for me since I do teach church history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is, we've been teasing this for what feels like ever now. We got this, I think we locked this in about a month ago and have been teasing the story of Christianity. It is a chronicle of Christian civilization from ancient Rome to today. And on the phone with us, renowned historian and best-selling author of National Geographic, Who's Who in the Bible and In the Footsteps of Jesus, Jean-Pierre Isbots. Am I saying that right? Isbots?
You're saying it correct. That's absolutely.
All right.
Woo! Nailed it, man.
Nailed it.
Excited. Welcome to the show. Dude, you have a huge rap sheet of awesome, if you will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're really excited. I promise you've never been on a theology show like this one.
Well, I look forward to it. Sounds like a lot of fun.
So we're excited to have you here. As I mentioned off air, we go through different different theological studies, if you will, not systematically necessarily, like through the Bible, but we just talk about things. We take phone calls and have covered everything from New Earth versus Old Earth. And usually we actually don't present a one side saying, hey, this must be correct. We kind of challenge the listener to study, research for themselves and see where they line up, obviously with the Holy Spirit. And so... we're having you on this morning, not necessarily to say, here's the history of the church, now do you believe in it, but more to have, we're drawing near to the Christmas season when we celebrate the birth of Christ, and that's really where your book begins. So we thought it'd be a great journey through 2,000 years of Christian history to just kind of go over what you've done with this ginormous book.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's of course a very challenging subject. And the reason why we came to it is that in 2007, I wrote a book called The Biblical World, which really tried to take the stories of the Hebrew scripture, the Old Testament, and the New Testament, in the context of the geography and the literature and the culture and the history of the lands in which these stories emerge. So we're talking Mesopotamia, we're talking Canaan, which would become Israel, Egypt. And we, you know, National Geographic typically does these beautiful illustrated books and print maybe 25, 30,000 copies. This thing became an international bestseller. I think it's right now one of the top-selling books in NetGeo's history. So they came back and said, well, what should we do? I said, well, what I really would love to do is take the figure of Jesus and do the same thing with Jesus. Or we just do put the story of Christ in the context of Galilee, in the context of the Herodian era, the Roman Empire, I don't know, and see if we could sort of really bring to life the world in which Jesus lived. And that became In the Footsteps of Jesus, a book that was published in 2012. And that became a bestseller in 6 weeks.
Wow.
So now we said, okay, what's the next step? I said, well, obviously we want to continue the story where, you know, Jesus is crucified, taken up to heaven. Now we want to see how his teachings and his example really played out in the world itself. Mm-hmm. And that became the story of Christianity. So it's taken a few years, of course, but I'm very blessed because I teach at a university in Santa Barbara called Fielding Graduate University, and we do PhD programs for adults like myself. and I found six doctoral students that I work with on their dissertations, and they said, "Gee, we would really, you know, like to work with you on that." So I have had some help. And so they looked more at the modern era, and I, of course, am very steeped in more ancient matter. So between us, we were able to continue this narrative from really the life of Jesus all the way to today. And, of course, we cannot do everything. And,
right.
And as I, you know, as I write in the book, there are some wonderful books that have been written about sort of the institutional history of the church, including one by Robert Mullen, who is actually one of the people on the peer review board for this book, a wonderful man, and I very much appreciated his feedback. But I was really interested in taking a look at what kind of an imprint has Christianity made on our Western civilization. Mm. Of course, on the one hand, certainly spirituality, but also ethics in terms of the development of an ethical system, a moral system, and the creation of cathedrals and music and art and literature. And it's impossible to separate Christianity from even today. And that is basically the subject of the book, how Christianity has shaped our common experience.
Wonderful.
I feel like I'm in a classroom, honestly.
It's awesome.
I'm surrounded by my co-host Mateo and Brian Nixon here, and they both have a copy of your book, just like flipping through it, and I'm just listening to you speak.
Yeah,
Jean-Pierre, this is Brian Nixon. We thought one of the fun things to do in this next hour is to basically do a survey of some of the main themes, what we'll call the greatest hits of your book. And what you just gave us was an amazing introduction and the reasons why you put this book together. So with your permission, we would like just to kind of highlight some of the key components that you feel as a historian, as a scholar, that Christians generally should be aware of. What we find, and what I find in my church history class a lot of times, is that people know about Jesus. They have a general sense of some of the early Christians, Peter, Paul, James, John, so on and so forth, the biblical record. But once you get past that, there's a little bit of nebulous.
And then in the 1960s.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right.
So,
and then Baptist,
and then Martin Luther King Jr. Wait, what?
Exactly. So for the sake that you gave an amazing introduction, what I would call into chapters 1 and 2, or at least you know the life of Christ and some of those components. What do you feel that we, our listening public, or Christians in general, should know about what you say in Chapter 2, the early Christians? What are some of those greatest hits that we should be aware of in our understanding of these earliest Christians?
Well, you know, it's really incredible that on the review board again, I was very much privileged to have a dear colleague, Bart Ehrman, who wrote a wonderful book called Lost Christianity. And we have to imagine, you know, you just imagine that, and this is what I tell my students all the time, is that the greatest challenge for us to imagine the world of Christ is to imagine a world where there was no internet, no television, no magazines, no newspapers, no nothing whatsoever. Information was communicated almost exclusively through the spoken word. And particularly since the apostles, we assume, were illiterate, they were fishermen. Jesus's ministry was relatively short. If we look at the Synoptic Gospels, which is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we sort of project a span of 18 months. If we look at John, it's a little bit longer, maybe two and a half years. But still, when you compare it to Jeremiah, for example, who ministered for 30, 40 years, had a scribe who wrote down everything that he said, we're looking at the ministry of Jesus as a very, very short period of time in which none of the people that were in his immediate orbit were able to immediately produce a document. And so we see the Gospels emerge, I believe, in the 60s when tensions rise in Judea between Jews and Christians. And so in the intervening period, the story of Jesus and the redemption that Christ brought to the world was communicated on the one hand through Paul and various letters that he wrote to the communities that he founded. But on the other hand, as Bart has shown, there were many other stories, traditions circulating about Jesus. And these stories were brought across the Mediterranean world by traders, by soldiers, by people who had a need to travel, by diplomats, by slaves. Anyone with the ability or the need to travel who was converted brought, out of their enthusiasm, brought that story to other parts of the world. And so what you see by the end of the first century, you see the sort of the Pauline tradition, the tradition of Paul, but you also see several other movements, if you will, Christianities, as Bart calls it, who are also in veneration of Jesus, but just had a slightly different slant at who Jesus was. And that all comes to a head, if you will, tragically, if some might say, in 313, when Constantine the Great says, okay, we're done. You know, Christianity is going to be a licensed tradition. We're embracing Christianity as a religion that can prosper in the Roman Empire. And it is the moment of the church's greatest triumph. And yet that triumph is somewhat marred by the fact that there's still these different movements about who Jesus really was. And it comes down to one question. It comes down to, is Jesus man or God or both? Which, of course, is a fundamental theological question that Paul and everyone else grappled with at the time. And for us Christians, it's clear he was made man, but he is God. He's the Son of God. But many, let me say, Greek followers struggle with that. And it goes back to Plato, because Plato and Socrates dealt with that issue too. They considered that every man has a spark of the divine in themselves, but does that make them equal to the divine? And so we have one particular priest from Alexandria. His name is Arius. And he says, well, you know, of course Christ was begotten by the Father, by the Holy Spirit, but because he was begotten by the Father, he cannot be of the same divine material, divine quality as the Father. We call it divine substance. Hmm. And that became sort of the issue that really challenged the growth of Christianity for, I would say, the first 500 years after Constantine the Great emancipated Christianity. And in some ways, you could say that reverberates still to this day after the Reformation and so forth. So I think if we're going to talk about Chapter 2, I think that was sort of a very important point. And then, of course, we have the Synod of Nicaea and the Nicene Creed, where it was clearly agreed that Jesus Christ is consubstantial, is of the same substance as the Father, and you know, Catholics and others recite that still every day, every Sunday. But others who followed Arius did not agree. They said, no, he is subordinate. In Greek, it's only the difference of one iota, you know. Mm. And that became Arianism, and Arianism followed later on by other, what was then called heretical traditions, you know, the Monophysites and so forth, continued that, and that's where we begin to see these multiple different movements within Christianity. All Christians, but with slightly different emphasis in the theology.
So you know, summarizing this, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that, you know, as Christianity spread, three of the components they were dealing with were its theological issues, obviously Arianism versus, you know, Augustinianism and, you know, all the variations, but also the polity, you know, of becoming a structural church as maybe what we'd call an Orthodox versus the other movements. And then thirdly, you alluded to it, was sort of a political a conjoining between a nationalized religion. Constantine, and though he himself allowed it, he didn't make it the official religion until later. But these are some of the components that you're saying really shape the early Christian experience.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I mean, Constantine, of course, is a key emperor, but he's actually not the first one to tolerate Christianity. And I tell this every time when I give lectures, you know, and presentations. I mean, poor Gallienus, who was the Roman emperor between 260 and 268, he never gets the credit. But he actually was the first one to say, this is ridiculous. Let these people worship the way they want. And so he issued a decree of toleration for Christians during his realm in 264, and that was abrogated by a successor. So what Constantine really did was reinstate the degree of toleration that Gallienus originated. But one thing that Constantine did do, and I like your term of nationalization, because he really was far more interested in Christianity as an important religion than in any of the other religions who were also emancipated at that time. For example, his architects, I mean, he really stimulated his architects, prodded by his mother, who was a devout Christian, to come up with a church building. And this is a wonderful story that I always tell. You know. So Christians needed a temple of their own. Now, Christians worshipped in a very different way than the Romans. What you did when you were a Roman is you would worship, but that's an individual activity. So you would buy a dove or something to sacrifice. You would go to the temple precinct. Outside was an altar where you sacrificed the poor animal that you were bringing with you. And once your sacrifice was done, you walked inside through the pronaos into the actual inner sanctum where the cult statue stood of the god that you were talking to. And then you raise your hands, and in privacy, basically, you set your prayers and your wishes. Christianity was very different, because Christianity worshipped as a community, as a group. So the temples that existed in Rome didn't work for that at all, because how are you going to squeeze 500-600 people in a small temple like that? Also, of course, the Christians of that time were loath to adopt a church building that looked just like one for Jupiter or any of the other Roman gods. So Constantine or his architects, we're not quite sure who could be credited, came up with a brilliant idea. They said, you know, we have this thing called a basilica, and the basilica was basically an administrative building. That's where you went for the courts. That's where the courts were in session. That's where you went for your, to seal your contract, your mortgage, your purchase of land. That's where all the official apparatus of the Roman Empire was based. And because so many things were going on, a basilica was typically very large. It was a large hall with a central nave, and side aisles were all the various offices of these bureaucrats sat. And at the end of the basilica stood an apse, a half-round space, with the cult statue of the reigning emperor. Whoever happened to be emperor, that's where his statue was. So the architects looked at that and said, that would really work very well for Christian worship, because we're going to get a lot of people in here. We all know we have the designs. We know how to build such a thing. We know the arches, and they were actually starting to experiment with reinforced concrete. And, we'll take the emperor out, and the apse will become the place where the altar goes. And that's how the basilica, which was an office building, if you will, a Roman office building, became the format, the prototype for Christian churches.
Great.
You're listening to Theology Thursday. On the phone right now, Jean-Pierre Isbouts, renowned historian and best-selling author of National Geographic, Who's Who in the Bible and in the Footsteps of Jesus, talking about his latest book, The Story of Christianity, a chronicle of Christian civilization from ancient Rome to today. And I know, Beenix, you are just like, is it foaming at the mouth? Are you frothing? What are you doing?
Well, I'm appreciating this greatly.
Okay,
let's just say that. Because what I appreciate that Jean-Pierre just said is one of the components that he brings out in this is the appreciation of the arts and what Christians did in architecture and through the arts. And I think that's a natural bridge to go to the next chapter, chapter 3, the Byzantine Empire. Because if the first section of the early Christians, doctrinal formation, nationalization of belief, and even when we get into the formation of, the canon of Scripture and other things, this is what Jean-Pierre was describing in the first half. But things begin to change in the Byzantine Empire. So Jean-Pierre, why don't you give us an overview of what goes on during the Byzantine, and in your book you put those dates as 313 to 600 CE, and I'd love to understand and let our listening audience just get a glimpse of what happens during that Byzantine Empire.
Well, a lot of things happen because the actual dating of the Byzantine Empire is a subject of some discussion.
Right.
Some people say, well, Constantine, that's the dude who said, okay, everybody, play nice, everybody is allowed, tolerated to do Christianity. I tend to think that really when we talk about Byzantine, we really begin with Theodosius. Theodosius was an emperor who rose to the throne in 379, and he basically succeeded a emperor called Julian. Mm-hmm. Julian the Apostate. He's the bad guy.
That's right.
In the story, because when he came to the throne, he said, this is all getting out of hand. We are a Roman empire. We need to stay focused on our Roman pagan cult. And okay, I'm not going to throw the Christians back in prison, but all the state funding for churches is going to be stopped. Mm. People who are Christians who are in my administration, they're going to be offered an out. They're going to be not in these positions anymore. And instead, as a counterweight to Christians, particularly in the Holy Land, I'm going to really empower the Jews in Judea to once again really be able to celebrate their religion, because this is a sort of a strange subset, because the Judea, Roman Judea, after the second century, had slowly become Jewish again, even though there were two Jewish revolts. The Romans recognized that the Jewish religion and the Jewish rabbinate really was a calming influence, was an organizational system that could really calm the people who had ridden so often in the past and give them a sense of autonomy. So by the time Constantine issues his decree of toleration, Judea was actually a Jewish nation led by a Jewish rabbinate based in Tiberias, and all of a sudden, this region became the Christian Holy Land. Hello.
Yeah.
And so you have all these bishops and priests and pilgrims rushing to Jewish Judea saying, no, this is now the Christian Holy Land. And a lot of tension rose again between Christians and Jews because now all of a sudden the apparatus of government was taken over by Christians. So Julian said, we're going to cycle that back. You know, Christian holy, no, we're going to give it back to the Jews. In fact, he said, I'm going to give the Jews the money to rebuild their temple. And the Jews were overjoyed. They said, oh, my God, this is the most incredible thing that ever happened. Just like Cyrus the Great gave us the money to rebuild the temple after it had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, we're going to do the temple again. Fortunately, I guess, or unfortunately, for the Jewish aspirations in Judea, and nobody actually believes, no historian believes that Julian was really serious about that. He died very early, in 363. And so you have Theodosius coming back saying, wiping his brow, saying, you know, we came very close to losing Christianity in the Roman Empire. And that's when you have Theodosius saying, Christianity shall now be the only religion in the Roman Empire, and that became a law. So two things happened then. Two things is that then Byzantium, which is, you know, today's Istanbul, really develops its own Christian rites, which is very much along the Greek traditions that emerged in that sense. And the second thing is that all of the movements within Christianity that did not quite agree to the Nicene Creed were forced to leave. And what they do is they settle in regions around the Byzantine Empire, including Saudi Arabia, including the Arabian Peninsula, excuse me. And that's where they're going to cater to merchants coming up and down from what's today Oman to the great Roman terminus in Petra. And these caravan routes, they bring frankincense and they bring silk from China and all that stuff. And these are wary travelers. So these Arianists and Monophysites and all these other, what we would then call heretical Christianities, begin to establish their institutes outside of Byzantium, where they will have a great, great impact on the evolution of the next faith to appear, which is Islam. And from that point on, we really recognize the eastern part of the empire as Byzantium. And increasingly, you see now tension emerging between the West and the East, because the West develops more Latin-oriented rites in Christianity. The East is more Greek. There are fights between the patriarchs, between the emerging Christianity in the West and the East. Yeah. And eventually, we have that great schism.
Wow. Yeah, and what you point out in this chapter on the Byzantine Empire, one of the main components that arise during this era is the monastic movement. And I think the monastic movement is an interesting bridge to get us to the next section about its spread throughout Europe. Your next chapter, it's expansion into Europe. And I think the monastic movement, obviously, in conjunction with the political powers that be, with some of the other emphasis that's going on in the Middle East there, really does push it into Europe. So can you talk about not only the expansion of Christianity into Europe, but also how the monastic movement helped to shape and propagate the Christian faith within that?
Also, us two over here, what the Monasmonimon movement is.
No. Monastery.
Monastery.
Of course, yeah. You guys are over here like nerding out, and I'm like, I don't, I think I understood nine words.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Cool, man.
Okay.
The monastic movement, totes, bro.
Yeah,
I was just,
yeah.
I was just well, Wikipedia-ing that this week.
Yeah, well, as Jean-Pierre will tell us, the monastic movement arose out of the Byzantine Empire, or an emphasis there in the Middle East.
There you go.
But then it heavily influenced the propagation of Christianity, you know, around Europe as well. But Jean-Pierre, what's your thoughts, not only about the monastic movement, but its expansion into Europe?
Well, you know, it's I'm glad you raised that because, the monastic movement is really very important. And what it means is that some people felt increasingly compelled to withdraw into the solitude. And particularly in the Byzantine Empire, you know, which covered large parts of what is today Jordan and Egypt and all these places, the obvious solitude is the desert. They felt that to really experience Christ, you need not be distracted by the everyday concerns. And, of course, there is a lot of that in the gospel. Christ himself withdrew into the desert for 40 days before assuming this ministry, before launching his ministry. So a lot of people were really intrigued by that. And Anthony of Egypt is one of the first ascetics who really showed the path to that. He went into the desert. He set himself up in an abandoned Roman fort, or a lot of these forts. In fact, you can still see one. I was in Jordan 2 weeks ago, and I visited one of these abandoned Roman forts. They look like they packed up yesterday. You know, it's an incredible thing. And lived there very frugally. And then what you see is other people want to join him. Very interesting. A lot of people want to join him. They want to experience that same feeling, but they need guidance, you know. Being out there in the desert, first of all, there are some practical issues of where you're going to find water, where you're going to get food. So there is definitely a practical purpose to living in the desert or in solitude as a group, as a community, but also because the leader of such a monastic community can then become a father of sorts, can become a spiritual leader who helps people to on that path to meditation and reflection. And the biography of Anthony was written and is significantly translated in Latin, which was, of course, the principal scholarly language in the West. Greek was the language in the East. Latin was the language in the West. And that biography became a tremendous impetus for then the spread of Christianity in Europe. And we have to remember that by the 4th century, whatever systematic control that existed in the West as part of the Roman Empire had fallen away because of barbarian invasion. I don't like the term barbarian because we have these images with these guys going, on their horses, you know, hacking heads up. Actually, most of these, quote, barbarian tribes were Christian. You know, it's something that's often forgotten. Many of these were different Christians. They were more like Latin Christians, but they had embraced Christ. They just wanted to get into your land, if you don't mind, and set up their own area. And so some of these Gothic tribes were, in fact, Christian. Others were not. And that's when you see these fearless missionaries. The first one, for example, who went to Germany, what is today Germany, Ulfilas, or Ulfila, which means little wolf, you see him starting to propagate, to evangelize. And it takes a long time for these efforts to really take root. And I'm not going to dwell on too much detail about that. But what is clear is that typically the pivotal moment, The key to winning a territory, if you will, for Christ, is the availability of the Bible in that language. Because, right, you know, scholars and the elites, the educated elites might speak Latin, but, you know, the people at large do not. And so for these people to really be exposed to the Gospels, they need to be able to read it in their language. And so in the East, for example, in Eastern Europe, you see two brothers, Cyril and Methodius, who were monks, who were educated priests, and they say, you know, we want to really evangelize in the East, but we need something in the Slavonic language. And they then create a Bible in the Slavonic language, making up characters for words that simply didn't exist. They actually create an alphabet in the process of writing the Bible, and that becomes then a great impetus for the what's happening. Same with Patrick of Ireland, who may or may not be a legendary figure. There's a lot of stuff in the literature about it, but you know, he becomes the Bishop of Ireland and then goes and evangelizes in Ireland. Now, Ireland is an interesting thing because there were no barbarian invasions there. So whereas Britain collapsed under these barbarian invasions, and many of the early Christian churches in Britain, or what we consider Britain today, were ultimately eliminated by these barbarians who were not Christians. In Ireland, the Celtic Christians very much kept Christianity alive. And so you see, again, a monastery led by Kildare and other people. So Thomas Cale has written a wonderful book, The Irish Saved Civilization.
Right. I've read it, quite familiar with
he's
it.
He's got a point, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it's
great.
A bit of an exaggeration.
Let me just highlight a few things in for this timeline. In the expansion of Europe, you know, you talked about the rise of the monastic movement in the Byzantine area. But when you get to the expansion into Europe of the Christian faith, there are some main players, you know, keeping with our theme of greatest hits. You know, we have Benedict, who was very important. Augustine of Hippo, who was quite important. Gregory, who was influenced by the monastic movement, as well as Jerome. And some of these guys, Jerome, who translated the Bible into Latin Vulgate. You have Augustine, who really helped shape the theology of the Middle Ages. You have Gregory, who really helped shape the liturgy, the music, and so on and so forth. So there's this train of thought from the rise of the monastic movement, as you said, the publication of the Desert Fathers, and then its expansion into Europe and into Ireland, and all of this just coalesced to spread the gospel, the Christian faith, throughout Europe. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, with the decline of the Roman civilization, you also get sort of decline of sort of an educational elite, if you will. There was a vacuum there, essentially. The Dark Ages, we refer to the Europe as Dark Ages, and it's probably an accurate term. For a while there, the order, both from a legal point of view and from an educational point of view, collapsed, and Europe lay prone to whoever was able to take it. And so you see that these monastic fathers like Benedict, and many of them came from Italy or the Byzantine era or you know, the newly evangelized territories. But they come in and they begin to create, because of their experience, something that we could call an original European Christianity. And that's where, you know, we have Benedict developing these monasteries, starting with, you know, a wonderful monastery in Monte Cassino, tragically destroyed in World War II. But his example and his rule book, if you will, how do you live, on the one hand, in the sacred contemplation of Christ, and on the other hand, how do you cater to the needs of the community around you? And it's that the fine line that you have to walk if you are going to be a monk. On the one hand, you want to seclude yourself and surrender yourself to Christ, but at the same time, Christ says you must cater to the needs in your community. You must take care of the poor. And so they apply that. And these monasteries then become the great center of the emergence of a European identity, where previously the center of civilization was the city, the polis, in Greek, run by the Romans with all of the attendant, you know, forums and temples and aqueducts and all that stuff. All that has fallen away. And now you see that the center of the new European proto-Renaissance becomes the monastery. And the monastery is where you can go for mass, but it's also where you can go for education. It's also where you can go for medicine. It's where you can go for food. A lot of these things are now radiating out from the monastery. It's fair to say that if that had not been the case, people like Benedict and others, and they had not created these these monasteries, it's very doubtful that Christianity would have developed the way it did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. On the phone, Jean-Pierre Isbouts. He's a renowned historian, best-selling author, talking about his latest book, The Story of Christianity, which just released end of October via National Geographic, if you will. For more information on him, jpisbouts.org. And Beenix, I know you're just stoked right now. I'm still trying to reconcile the fact that how this all reconciles with the fact that Jesus is white and church and this started in America.
Don't even get us started on that. But
are you sure? Because that's what I heard.
We've seen pictures.
Christianity is an American religion.
Well, no. We want to keep Jean-Pierre, on task and keeping us going and to give us that information. Of course, he's given us a view of the early Christians, the formation of its theological dispositions, the nationalization. Talked about the Byzantine influence and expansion into Europe. Well, next on this timeline, the greatest hits, if you will, is Christianity in the East in the Age of Conflict. Mm-hmm. Really, chapters 5 and 6 coalesce into talking about the Western expansion, the expansion into Europe through monasteries and a more, a nationalized version. And then we have the Christianity of the East, which culminates in the conflict of 1054. So, Jean-Pierre, do you mind just walking us through not what's really happening in the West with the rise of the monastic movements, Augustine's theological treaties, and Jerome's translation of the Vulgate, but what was happening in the East? Because I think many Christians, even informed Christians, sometimes forget that there is a third branch of Christianity, what we would call the Orthodox branch, be it Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Coptic, in all its variations. But we Protestants particularly, we always think the Protestant Reformation, when Martin Luther nailed the thesis, that's when the split occurred. But really, there was conflict, and there was another expression of Christianity. And in your chapters 5 and 6, you really go into that. So give us an overview of what was occurring there.
Sure, absolutely. And we talked a little bit about the Slavonic tradition and Cyril and Methodius, but of course, the real prize that was lying on the horizon was Russia. I mean, Russia was a vast country, not a political country, but a vast region that had really one of the few areas in Europe that had been impervious to early Christianity. There's a legend that Apostle Andrew came there and build a church in the city of Kiev, it's in Ukraine. And today you have a beautiful church there that's named after him. But probably that is a legendary story. And Byzantine missionaries had been coming there, knocking on the door for many centuries, and were shown the door. They said, we don't need that. We have our own pagan tradition. And then, of course, Cyril and Methodius did their translation of the Bible in Slavonic, and that started to intrigue the aristocracy. It always, in the East, it always happened through the aristocracy, different from the West. And you find that there are these princes who basically see how powerful Byzantium is and how powerful Europe is becoming, and they see that both of these regions are that power, are so unified, because they are under the banner of Christianity, under the banner of Christ. So they are intrigued. They're worried that if they embrace Christianity, they're going to be subordinated by these powers. They're going to be either Byzantine or Latin, and they're going to lose their power. But they're certainly intrigued by the promise of the Christian banner, of what it can do in unifying the nation. So what you have is a queen of Kiev, a Queen Olga in 950, and she's baptized. And she convinces her grandson, Vladimir, in 956, to embrace monotheism. And here's a wonderful, wonderful story. Vladimir says, okay, but I think there are three flavors. There is, there's Byzantine Christianity, there's Latin Christianity, and then there is Islam, that he's heard that, there's this new faith happening called Islam. And he can't choose, so he sends three missionaries, emissaries, three ambassadors to these territories. He said, okay, look at what's happening and come back and tell me which form of monotheism we should adopt. So these envoys, they go to the Muslim lands first, and they come back and say, well, you don't want Islam because they don't drink alcohol, and they don't eat pork. And pork is one of the great culinary specialties in Kiev. So, you know, the chefs of Kiev would not be happy if we went for Islam. Then the embassies came back from the German Gothic tribes, and they said, well, you know, it's okay. They have Latin Christianity there, but it's sort of boring because they sit in these monastic churches and they pray and they read, and there's not much happening. There's no music or dancing or anything like that. And then come these emissaries from Constantinople and said, oh, my God, you will not believe what we saw. Gold everywhere, beautiful songs, mosaics sparkling wherever you look. Wonderful splendor of the Byzantine court. And that's when Vladimir said, that's what I want. So that's in 988, and that is then the beginning of the Russian Orthodox Church, and they embrace the Greek rites of what's still going on in Byzantium. And then when what happens is when Constantinople in the 15th century is overrun by the Ottoman forces under Mehmet, you see that then Russia, which is so closely allied with the Byzantine Empire, says, okay, since Constantinople is now no longer a Christian land, it's been conquered by the Muslims, we are now the new Byzantium. And then you see Russia essentially adopting the mantle of leadership of the Greek Orthodox Church of Byzantium. So, you know, the double-headed eagle, which is the symbol of the Byzantine emperor, is now carried by the Tsar. In fact, even to this day, Putin, when he comes into the Great Hall, you will see that same double-headed eagle, which originally was the seal of the Byzantine emperor. So Russia then becomes the heir to the Byzantine tradition. And that's why we have that still to this day.
Now, where does the conflict arise between the East, the Latin churches, and the Eastern churches of the Orthodox churches and the Western churches of the Latin churches? How does that conflict arise and come to a head in 1054?
Well, you know, it's very, very tragic because, you know, it's often said that World War I happened or did not need to have happened if there had just been an easy communication method between the Emperor of Germany, the Emperor of Russia, and the King of Britain. If these guys had been able to talk to another in real time, a lot of the misunderstandings would have been dealt with, and this war would have never happened. A similar thing you could say between Byzantine Church and the, quote, Latin or European Church, which was becoming led by a patriarch or pope. In Rome, actually, the term, they didn't use the word pope, they used the word Pontifex Maximus, which is actually the title of the chief priest in the old Roman pagan cult.
That's right.
Latins accepted that same stuff, chief priest, Pontifex Maximus. And the really, there were a lot of tensions, and none of them really were of such a severe nature that they could not have been overcome if two people had just sat together and said, let's work this out. But because of the immense distances and the cultural differences, it became increasingly difficult. There were, first of all, political issues. There were contested territories, notably on the Italian peninsula. There were areas that Byzantium claimed, and there were areas, quite obviously, that the Europeans claimed. There were differences in theology. There were differences in who is really the boss of Christianity. You know, who's in charge? Is it the patriarch or the emperor in Constantinople and Byzantium, or is it the Pontifex Maximus in Rome? Of course, nobody wanted to give a quarter. And it came to a head in 1054 when a papal ambassador, we're not quite sure if he was authorized to do so, told the patriarch in Constantinople that unless he accepted the authority of Rome, as it was termed, the mother of all churches, they would split. And again, it's a silly thing, you know. They could have sat together, and in fact, they tried in the 15th century in the Renaissance in Florence. There was a concordat, and the patriarch and the papal delegation sat together, literally in the midst of the great Florentine Renaissance, to work things out. And they came up with a concordat. But by the time, you know, he came back to Constantinople, it was no longer politically expedient. So 1054, when the Patriarch Michael did not accept Rome's primacy, this split became final. And then you have this horrible thing happening, and this is where I want to get to next, because there are a few more things I would love to cover with you.
Is
the Crusaders. I mean, this horrible crusade, the Fourth Crusade in 1204. They were supposed to go to the Holy Land, to liberate the Holy Land, and instead, driven by greed, largely, they were enlisted as mercenaries in a civil war that was going on, and sacked Constantinople. So here you have Latin European knights going to Constantinople and destroying the churches and all the wonderful treasures of the Eastern Church. And you don't know. But that event still rankles to this day because the Latin Church never apologized for that in so many words. And so even though our current pope is trying to, as did the former pope, is trying to bridge those two worlds once again, that is still a very much a sensitive issue.
Wow. Yeah, very much. And that's a great bridge again into your next chapters, really discussing the medieval church into the Renaissance church, because the Crusades were such a defining moment, not only for Islam and Christianity, but East versus West. So as you go into the next chapters on the medieval church and the Renaissance church, you know, obviously some of the greatest hits would be someone like St. Francis, the rise of the cathedral, as opposed to a Byzantine structure of the church, Albert Suger, and the rise of the arts, and you know, even the hospitals. But there's so much that we could be discussing with the medieval church. Thomas Aquinas' theological construct in comparing and contrasting that to Augustine. But again, give us just a general overview from the moment of the Crusades. What happens in the medieval church, both in the West and in the East, and how does that begin to shape, you know, what we would say the modern era as we descend upon that?
Well, it's a great question, because that's exactly what happens. And as I argue in the book, the Crusades are often considered a military failure, in the sense that only the First Crusade, and very quickly, the reason why the Crusades were really called by Pope Urbanus is the fact that under Islamic rule in the Holy Land, pilgrims were generally tolerated. Islam itself has a pilgrimage, the Hajj to Mecca. So under the early Islamic rulers, the Umayyads, pilgrims, Christian pilgrims, even Jewish pilgrims, were welcome in the Holy Land. I mean, yeah, they were taxed and all that, but generally the inns were clean, the roads were fairly safe, and nobody, you know, gave them a hard time if they wanted to go to Jerusalem and pray in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where the tomb of Jesus was venerated, and Golgotha was venerated. Mm-hmm. That changed under the conquest of the Fatimids and even the Seljuks. And the Seljuks were a nasty bunch, and they really didn't go for that. They said, you know, they adhered to a very radical brand of Islam. And they said, no, we don't want Christians or Jews, for that matter, in our land. This is a Muslim land. Jerusalem is a Muslim city, so go away. And that's when you see that pilgrims were horribly vandalized. They were either robbed or killed, or you know, many of the inns were very unsafe. And pilgrims keep going, because pilgrimage in the Middle Ages was a very important part of the Christian experience. And it became such that finally the Pope said, we need to do something, because the mistreatment, the abuse of Christian pilgrims in the Holy Land is beyond all bounds. And that was true. There is absolutely nothing. So there was really a legitimate reason, if you will, to go to the Holy Land and to clear the path for these pilgrims. The aim of the Crusades was not to evict the Muslims from their territory, or to end the Islamic Empire, or to convert the Islamic Empire. It was simply to create a corridor of safety within the Holy Land. And that's what they do. The First Crusade takes the Muslims by surprise, and so is able to create several, they call them kingdoms, which is really a grandiose term for regions, because of, you have multiple nationalities vying for control. So several kingdoms are created, and the kingship is handed over to a Frenchman and a German and a Brit. And for a while there, for about 80 years, the Holy Land is indeed Christian, in a sense that Muslims are allowed to go about their way, but Christians can certainly, you know, go there and visit all the holy places. And then the Muslim armies, sort of the Muslim rulers, get their act together, and they marshal these immense armies, and this begins the decline of the Crusader presence in the Holy Land, and within 80, 90 years, they're all gone. And then Crusades keep on coming. They're militarily ineffective. They're never able to establish their Christian foothold once again. But the real importance of these great military expeditions is the fact that it marshals the European idea of a nation state. As I said, up to this point, the center was the monastery. Mm-hmm. But now you see from the 10th, 11th century onwards that the monastery is slowly being overshadowed by the growth, once again, of poleis in the Greek sense, the cities. Trade is resuming. Money is pouring in. Flanders is trading with Italy, and Italy is trading with Britain, and there is a flow of capital, and the capital is freed up to create cities, to create residential areas. The idea of a prince emerges. You have Charlemagne, who then takes all of the disparate regions of France and creates the first French kingdom, a whole new concept, really.
Right.
And so I really believe that the real impact of the Crusades was the emergence of the European nation state. Now, you see definitely a real France. You see a definite Britain. You see slowly but surely a specific Spanish identity, and that is, not surprisingly, where then these great civilizing initiatives come about.
I appreciate that so much, because in my class, I say the exact same thing: the rise of the nation state, the socio-political ramifications of the consequence of the Middle Ages, the Crusades, everything that arose from that really helped shape Europe and consequently the rest of the world, which sadly, we're not going to be able to get to today, because in chapters 9, 10, 11, and 12, you really talk about
the age of 1,000 years to go.
I know. we talk about the age of discovery, the age of enlightenment, colonialism here in America, and the modern world. So, Steve-O, you're going to have Jean-Pierre back on to finish this conversation sometime, but give us some thoughts here, Steve-O.
Yeah, well, just going through everything, Jean-Pierre, it's been incredible to have you on. I wish we had more time.
Yeah. We need 2 hours.
We do need 2 hours. We would love to have you back on, because I think we're getting into, you know, for us young bucks, you know, these are the times where, you know, it begins to head over to the Americas, if you will, you know, in the next few hundred years. And I'd really love to get into that and talk about it. I have one final question, though. As a historian, you've chronicled the story of Christianity 2,000 years leading to today. So you've seen the history, the entire history of the Christian church. You studied this for years. So my question to you is, as a historian, you've seen where we've been as a church. Where do you see the future of the Christian church headed based upon its history?
Well, I think the one thing that I hope readers will take away from reading the book is the incredible power of persistence. I mean, I cannot think, with the exception of Judaism and perhaps Islam, I cannot think of any other religious movement that emerged from the early part of the Roman Empire. And we're talking 2,000 years ago, in antiquity, and still continues this incredible growth. I mean, the fact is, the question is, why are the questions that Jesus asked in the first century, still so relevant to us today? I think that is the most fascinating thing that I tried to grapple throughout this. Why are these brilliant ideas that Jesus formulated, why are they still resonating with us to this day? And I think it's because as I write in the very beginning, is that Christianity had a different proposition than everybody else. Hmm. You know, when you went for a Asian religion or for a Roman or Greek religion, there was always an element of exclusivity, you know, whether you were part of a particular tribe or class or wealth status. And then Christianity comes and says, you know, we don't make any distinctions, whether you are a slave or a senator, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you are Gothic or Roman or Greek. We don't care.
Beautiful.
If you are pure of heart, if you are ready to receive Christ in your heart, you will be redeemed and you will get there. Just embrace Christ with your whole being. And you will become part of our great community, and we will take care of you. That proposition was so incredibly unique that it continued that tremendous growth. And I see that today in the great growth centers of Christianity, which is Asia, which is Africa and Latin America. I mean, in Africa alone, for example, you have Anglicans who are now the third largest church in the world with 18 million members and 160 different churches. And most of that growth is in Africa, which is, many people are calling that the emerging new world. Just like America was the emerging new world in the 18th century, we believe that Africa will become the next, certainly for Christianity. Now, I just came back from, just literally, day before yesterday, I flew back in from Dubai. I spent 3 weeks in the Middle East, and as I often do, we're working on the next book. And I am just so incredibly moved by, for example, the piety of Coptic Christians in Cairo. I visited a few churches there, and life is not easy right now for Coptic Christians in Egypt, but these people persevere. Mm. And I think it's because of that that I think Christianity has a bright future. It may not be the Christianity that we would recognize, but there's no doubt in my mind that idea will persevere.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Jean-Pierre Isbouts, renowned historian, best-selling author of multiple National Geographic books, Who's Who in the Bible, In the Footsteps of Jesus, Now the Story of Christianity, A Chronicle of Christian Civilization from Ancient Rome to Today. Jean-Pierre, it has been amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. We would love you to come back at some point and hang out with us, because, as I said, we still have about 800 years of history that we would love to cover.
About 8 billion questions.
So, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Right. Thank you.
Jean-Pierre Isbouts, J.P. Isbouts, J.P.I.S.B.O.U.T.S.org for more information on him, his works. That is it for us. If you missed any part of the show, mystaticradio.com/TheologyThursday. You can download the podcast. Woo! We're out.
Yeah.
That's it for us, man.
Man, what a day.
Thanks, B-Nix.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, incredible. Up next, Middays with Mitch. We'll see you guys again mañana. It's Team Awesome Morning Party.
Goodbye.
Static.